Blog Talk Radio.
I think there's a perception of love full of conception. When it starts to break down, you'll see the time that you've invested. There's no natural selection. If feelings come and go, there's no protection. So even hurt will in time become accepted. And so while I sit here just reading books to my daughter, looking around the room, seeing everything that we bought her. Flashbacks to her mom giving birth inside of the water. Fast forward to present day and his family's facing slaughter. Remember what I taught her, never thought she would harm her. All is hurt and resentment, perhaps I gave her incentive. So now I'm a baby father, instead of being a husband. We both stubborn and petty, I'm ready to find redemption. She's ready to find attention, couldn't see her intention. She seemed to have a new man, nothing I could do on prevention. But you live your life, though it ain't as short as we think. Bring that nigga near my daughter, I kill him, won't even blink. I'm watching you moving backwards, she thinks it's cool to be ratchet. While hair and skin might be natural, image is something practiced. So is she faking the actual? Or maybe I'm just bitter while painting a clearer picture, cause moving on is impractical. So is this a heartbreak? Maybe it isn't known, it's probably karma. I've just styled a couple heartbreaks of my own. And so, before you leave and before we create issues, here, there's a piece of my soul you can take with you. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. A keepsake for you to hold if you were seeking me. Before I go, I gotta leave you with a piece of me. I guess that everything was nothing like it seemed to be. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. I guess that everything's nothing like it seemed to be. How did we come about? Truth be told, I cannot remember. Maybe I do a little. I think we met in December. Scratch that, there was a snowstorm, thinking it's February. We've known each other for years, so that timing ain't necessary. What's odd is that you liked me for years and I never noticed. Well, maybe I saw the signs, but on you I just wasn't focused. You had a boyfriend initially, with who you had some history. Together for a couple years, but you don't think it's meant to be. So we end up chilling while we did, it's still a mystery. Then you had started kissing me, lines we crossed them essentially. I'm in your room on top of you, caught inside of your wetness. This nigga's calling your phone, right then I start to regret this. Next morning you break up with him, hoping he gets a message. Say you got some heavy feelings for me, yet want to express it. But shit, I didn't feel the same, I just let it continue. Kiss your neck to not look into your eyes whenever I'm in you. There's guilt inside of my heart, I wasn't thinking with that. Her pussy so tight and wet, that's what keeps on bringing me back. Sometime later she's in search of commitment I couldn't give to her. And at this point relationships only create a prisoner. She's got her own place, she's asking me can I live with her. She said I got a heart, but in mind she's only a visitor. So though at times a nigga may miss you, here's a piece of my mind that you can take with you. True. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. A keepsake for you to hold if you were seeking me. Before I go, I gotta leave you with a piece of me. I guess that everything was nothing like it seemed to be. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. I guess that everything was nothing like it seemed to be. We met at work, she said she's looking for her Mr. Right. I'm staring at her thinking, damn, this girl's my kryptonite. Red bone, fat ass, pretty feet. Started talking every day and at a point the shit gets deep. We daily texting and chatting and soon everybody starts to think that we're an item. Blame me for letting it happen. I'm tripping since she's older, thinking this ain't perfect timing. On the dance floor at the Christmas party, we touching and grinding. Watched her cry inside the cafe, she sang, which was rare. She used to be in the band, but stopped singing cause no one cared. Well, maybe that's a bit harsh, she just never saw success. Became a fan of D.A.R. and said with talent I was blessed. Conversations heating up, late nights just talking sex. Said the way I used to word things would quickly make a wet. Fast forward, shit didn't change, and shit now we barely talking. She may text me every now and then, but really isn't often. She said you might be the one, but our bond is way too close. She sent me news the next day, so I'm confusing her approach. Shit, it's meant to be a fantasy and simply nothing more. Phone sex and freaky texting, but that's all that we explore. Can't lie, I felt connection, but just knew it wouldn't work. If we tried, it wouldn't last, so I risk us getting hurt. Maybe in the future I may get you, but here's a piece of imagination you can take with you. I'm saying, so I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. A keepsake for you to hold if you were seeking me. Before I go, I gotta leave you with a piece of me. I guess that everything was nothing like it seemed to be. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. I guess that everything was nothing like it seemed to be.
Reach for the top.
Baltimore, Maryland, and all of us. I feel like pieces of all of us are in that song. That is a deep song. Can't wait to hear about it because, you know, wow. And before I start going on and on and on because this is just wonderful, welcome to the weekend edition of Culture Shock Entertainment Reports, and super excited. Love it, love it, love it. Friend of the show, my Twitter pal, my BTR cohort, True God, True God Immortal, tweet him. I'm always telling you guys, and you know this is true. Every episode, I always ask you guys to follow True God at True God Immortal because he tweets some of the most awesome tweets out there. I don't care who you are. His tweets really get you to thinking. But True God Immortal is with us. I'm talking about he's with us now at the top of the hour right now. We'll play. That was the premiere of Piece of Me. We will play it again also for you. But, hey, Soul Revival 2 drops in October. I am super, super excited for you. I mean, my goodness. I want to hear more and more and more, and Piece of Me is just so hot. Chime in. Feel free to chime in also at 714-409-0614. True God will let us know when he's ready for you guys to call in. But also the chat room is open. If you don't have a listener profile account, create one so you can interact with us here in the BTR community and have fun in the chat room. Always having fun in the chat room. And you never know who's in the chat room. I'm telling y'all. I mean, really. And those of you that like to chat with celebs, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, celebs chat with me a lot. And I know how True God feels about people who love celebrities, but it's just the truth. And a lot of celebrities, one thing about this show, Entertainment Lifestyle Show, is that we talk about all topics that attract all people. So, really, I'm like True God Immortal. All of us are human, regardless of who we are. And speaking of tweets, Slim Thug was tweeting out some awesome tweets today also. Check them out. I won't go into Slim Thug because we're focusing on True God Immortal. You guys know how much I love it when he's a guest here. So I just wanted to, I was wondering when should I premiere the song? And I was like, well, maybe, I said, no, I'm just going to go ahead and kick the show off with the new song. And it is definitely setting the mood. I know you guys want to hear it again, huh? But we got to talk to True God. And before we go any further, got to send our prayers to those that were injured, those that's missing, those that were killed during the crash in San Francisco. So I don't want to get emotional regarding that too. And it's just so much going on. But again, I hope your 4th of July weekend has been a good one. If you celebrated 4th of July, Independence Day, America's birthday, today is your birthday, or this is your birthday weekend also, happy birthday weekend to you too. And if you're getting married, because this is, but still a wedding season, congratulations on your nuptials also. But let's go ahead and just zoom in and talk with True God. Let's get the party started, and you will hear a few more of his songs also. But you know, he always has a lot to talk with us about. So he's going to, of course, one thing I like about him, he loves to talk about his life, his projects, his past projects, his current projects, his future projects, etc. And I read a tweet that this is going to be one of the most fulfilling interviews that we've ever experienced. So I am so glad I took my nap because I said I got to take a nap so I could be well prepared for this talk with True God. So here he is. My friend, True God, I mean a true underground artist, even when he is that superstar mainstream artist, He will never forget his underground roots. I know this. What's up, True God? Wait a second.
I'm here. I'm here.
What's
Can
up,
you hear
True
me?
God? Well, you're here and everywhere. Pieces of what's, you. A piece of you.
What's going on?
What's up? Super excited like always whenever talking with you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. I always have fun when I'm on the show. Always get to talk a lot about things I don't usually talk about. So I'm definitely glad to be back.
Oh, thank you. I want to thank you wholeheartedly right now for coming back. And we learned so much from you. And learned so
yeah.
much from your tweets and all and the other ways that you communicate with us. Yesterday I posted one of your YouTube videos from 7 months ago, and you had Zuri in the video with you, and I shared it on my Tumblr page and sent it all out to everybody so people can that haven't actually seen you or talked to you in person can really feel you. And you come off. You, I mean, you are so real. There's nothing fake about you.
Yeah, I just you know, I'm just me. You know, that's just all I can be. I know I rub some people the wrong way. Some people like it. People don't. You know, I'm just being myself. I think the best way to live life is to be authentic. So as long as you're being yourself and who you are, I don't think you have anything to worry about. You know, not everybody's going to like you. You're going to have friends. You're going to have enemies. But just be true to yourself.
Yeah. And who you think are your enemies are usually your alliance or our supporters. And sometimes those that we think are our friends and who care for us, we find out different. Or we find out a lot about betrayal, something that you've talked about with me before. So, but how do we deal with that? Because that is so hurtful. I deal with it. My friends of mine on and offline, they deal with it. And some people have a hard time dealing with what you're saying, you know, when it comes to their lives. So what gives you the go? To just be you.
Just you know, for me the thing is that that's all I know how to be. So you know, when you listen to the music and everything that I do, even if you listen to like the radio show, you know, that we do, it's just me. Everything is just an extension of me. I don't see any reason for me to put on, you know, like a character or anything like that for like especially for the music. I think hip hop itself and music in general, they create characters like superheroes almost, like where there's no vulnerability. You know, there's like no vulnerability shown in most of popular music because it's better for the public to gravitate towards phoniness. You know, money, you know, we send money, we make this or this and that. Like, I got this chick doing that. Like, that's the images that they give off, and that's entirely not, you know, what I feel like presenting to the public. And in essence, it's just really what I'm going through at the time. If you hear me talking about anything in my music or even on Twitter or even stuff like that, it's just things that are going through my mind at the time or things that I'm dealing with. So make no apologies for anything. I think everybody should be like that. Now, everybody's going to like it, you know, but you're better off being that way regardless.
Yes. Wow. That's a good point. And like a tweet that you sent out earlier today, I'm not reading it like straight off, but to paraphrase it, you mentioned something, the topic of underground rappers. And really people that listen to rap and hip hop. And you mentioned that some people say they don't listen to underground rap because blank. And I'm curious because I'm someone that have just, I have always been attracted. I mean, I'm 40, the age doesn't matter, but I'm 44, so I've loved hip-hop since I was a little girl, since the birth of it. And I've always gravitated, to me, all the rap superstars were created underground and came from under, you know? So
yeah.
How can people even say, I don't listen to underground rap or hip-hop? What usually feels in that blank? That's what I'm trying to say, because some of the greats right today, Jay-Z, what was he? Underground.
And that's the thing. I don't think people realize that. Like, people look at it and they'll say, I don't listen to underground artists. I don't listen to underground rappers because, you know, they're always online promoting their music, or they do it this way, or they do it that way, and they do it, You know, and the thing is, like you're saying, like, every single artist started from the underground. Like, if you look at, like, DMX, DMX was doing battles from 93, 94. He was
oh, man.
You know, Nas was just sitting on his, you know, sitting on his corner in Queens. Or, you know, even some of the newer guys, like J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar and guys like that. Like, Kendrick Lamar was just in Compton doing
yeah.
his music. J. Cole was, you know, flying out to New York trying to submit beat tapes to Jay-Z or, like, L.A. Reid's son. Like, it's just all the same hustle. It's just different methods. But the problem is that we have so many artists, so many, well, I won't say artists, but so many rappers today that come out and they have disposable music that they have such a bad stigma. And if you promote your music through social media or through any online avenues, people automatically say, oh, you're an underground rapper or you're a Twitter rapper or you're a YouTube rapper, when that's shitting on somebody's art automatically. Like, you don't even
yeah.
take time to listen. Because if you listen, some people are like, oh, I only like such and such because he's a commercial artist. Like, that's a sheep mentality. Like, you like Jay-Z. Jay-Z's album come out this week, and Jay-Z's album is, you know, like, it's a dope album. But if I could listen to somebody else's album who doesn't have $500 million and they put the time and effort in to make better lyrical music, better beats, everything, like, that doesn't mean just because it's Jay-Z that it's automatically better. And that's what when I talk about people
exactly.
kind of shitting on underground artists, is that, like, myself, I don't feel like I'm competing with the artist who's got 200 views on YouTube or who's got, like, 100 followers on Twitter. I'm competing with the person that's got $500 million or the person that's got 10 albums and they went platinum, because that's where I want to be. So if you it,
exactly.
it's all about where you want yourself to be. You can call me underground. I don't consider myself underground. I just look at it as if I'm not as mainstream as everybody else or commercial.
Exactly.
And my music,
and that's how I look at some of my favorite artists from the past and present. I mean, my favorite artists. Look, I talk about you, like I talk about LL Cool J and Jay-Z and so on. You're one of my favorite artists, so rap artists, and you're not just you're multi-talented. You have so much going on. So you're definitely proof that hip hop is a lifestyle. You are not identified just by your music, but by your lifestyle. And so that is definitely a good point, because it's good that you mentioned that, because I'm from the days where guys and females and, you know, record any record companies would press up CDs and sell them out their trunks.
Yeah.
Make real tapes, cassette tapes, and, you know, get them out there. So, but now people are doing it via YouTube, Twitter, and different social media outlets. Hey, don't hate. I'm one of them. Very seldom say hating, but don't hate on anybody's game just because that is what's working for them.
And that's the thing. Like I was having a conversation with somebody. We were in the studio, and they were like, well, I mean, today underground artists are different. I said, what's different than 50 Cent coming out with 3 or 4 mixtapes
yeah.
that was spread through New York City, or Cameron the Diplomat doing the same thing, or this guy doing the same thing, and somebody sending a demo tape in? It's really no different. It's just that instead of sending a demo tape to, you know, the record labels, you're just putting it out to the people, and the people make the judgment. And I think that's the thing. Like, it's all sheep mentality when you look at, like yo, if it's not Jay-Z or Nas, I don't fuck with it. And it's like, all right,
uh-huh.
well.
Well,
you know,
thank
like,
you for elaborating, because I'm like, I'm an old head here, but I thought I was hip, but I'm trying to figure out, why would anybody reject underground independent music? But now I see. And really, the people
know,
that they're going toward are like the ultimate underground artists. They're just popular throughout the mass media.
You know, and I think that's the thing, like mainstream hip-hop is targeted to a certain audience. It's targeted to an audience that lives in, that wants to live in a fantasy world.
Well,
concert tour goers,
mainstream art concerts, and I mean indie artists and underground artists, touring is important. But I think you're right. It sounds like you're right. It sounds like it's geared towards the concert goers worldwide. The ones that
well,
were
see,
about
the thing. When,
all the
when,
tour
when I say,
gear.
When I say it's marketed to the demographic, is marketed to people who want to believe in a certain lifestyle. Like, if an artist is talking about, I got so much money, or I got your chick in my whip and we doing this and that, for some reason, people aspire to do that. Like, you don't want to aspire to get to a certain plateau, put in the work it takes to get where you need to go. You just want to live the lifestyle. Like, you want to be in the bars and the club, like, all the time, like, popping bottles and stuff like that. And that's perfectly fine if you want to do that. But there's also a reality outside of that people live. And that's what I'm – and that's, like, what I represent is that reality side. Like, if you listen to my music – like, this next album is different because I'm talking about different experiences from what you might have heard on the other couple of albums or projects, because this is my first project as a single man with a, you know, as a father. So I'm talking about a lot more personal stuff than you might have heard on the last record. But at the same time, I'm also talking about things I'm experiencing in a single life and just having fun with certain stuff, or just even more aggressive, more, you know, more in your face type of music. But at the same time, it's still relatable. Whereas you could take, if Jay-Z talks about, oh, I'm sitting on 100 million going for, you know, 100 million, I'm trying to go for a billion, there's not a lot of people who can relate to that. But people always want to relate to that because they want to, like, somebody said to me, when Jay-Z wins or Obama wins, I win. And we had this, and I told him, I said, I understand where you're coming from. I said, but how do you win when Jay-Z gets a deal with Samsung and that's going to make him like $20 million? Where's your money at? That's not, that doesn't represent you. Like, I can see you being inspired by somebody else's story to go get it on your own. That's good. But don't say Jay-Z wins, I win, Obama becomes president of the United States, but you still broke in the hood. You still broke whoever you are. Like, we got to work our way up on our own and put in work to get to that point. Like, it's all a process. I don't think people understand. Sometimes I don't think people understand, like, when they look to Jay-Z's and all the, like, black, you know, powerful black figures that came from the hood or came from, you know black America, they don't see that, you know, it takes a process to get there. Some of them didn't even get there on their own. They had a lot of, you know, help along the way. There's a lot of secret stuff that goes on in the industry that people don't even know about. So, you know, when you see that person, don't use that as a catalyst for what you want to be. You know, create your own. That's what I'm
saying. It's good you mention that, because how often do you hear people, even in their acceptance speeches, even after they have thanked so many people that have helped them, some artists will say, I did this on my own. I have heard so many say that. I'm like, okay. You know? So yeah, it's good you mention that also, because there's a lot of support. We all need support.
Yeah, I mean that's I think that's the thing, is that for me, like, everybody who I have that's on my team or around me, like, it's a support system that we all have for each other. Like, we both all put in the work to, you know, build what we have, and it goes for everybody. And I think,
yeah, but of course, our God's gifted talent, or talent we've learned, yeah, you know, we've done that. But don't disregard those that have been there for you. And, you know, and that's another reason why I thank you, because you appreciate my support and the support of others also, that you know genuinely love your music and love your vibe and love you. So, you know, because all people don't accept other people's support. You know, and I appreciate your support also of me and my endeavors, because everybody's not like this. I'm thanking you now, you know, because everybody don't, and I guess everybody don't, you know, people have their reasons, but I thank you for what we have going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can ask anybody who you know, I work with and my team work with, that we always, we support other people, you know, and we support each other. Regardless, like, even in the team aspect, you know, you're gonna butt heads sometimes, not agree on certain stuff, but always, and even with, like, affiliates that I don't agree with, we butt heads, I'm gonna still support them regardless. Like, and that's the thing, it happens. I mean, that happens. I'm a headstrong, I'm a very dominant person naturally, so, like, I'm gonna butt heads with people, but at the same time, if I believe in your vision or we believe in each other, I'll still support you regardless, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's just different now, because, like, musically, I feel like I owe a lot to the people that I'm around to help me shape the music that I am, you know, today. Like, I have friends who I'm around on a daily basis, who I'm almost on a daily basis, who, because of them, you know, I'm willing to try a little bit, you know, different things musically, or talk about these experiences that I'm going through. I have to thank the woman who gave me a child, because some of the best songs, as you hear on Piece of Me, had come from, you know, talking about that situation and that relationship, because I wouldn't have that energy or that inspiration to talk about it if shit wasn't as fucked up as it is, wasn't fucked up as it is right now. And you know, even on Piece of Me, if you listen to the entire song, there's three different situations that's happened since December, since I've initially, you know, became quote unquote single. So there's a lot of different things that have happened since then that, you know, I talk about in the song. It's three verses that are basically intended for three different women. The first one is, you know, my ex, who, you know, mother of my child. And, you know, if you listen to the lyrics, I'm getting very deep into stuff. And then the second one is somebody who I used to know before, you know, years ago, used to go to school with, who we reconnected after I became single. And, well, we reconnected after I became single, and she started to grow feelings that I didn't feel the same way. It was just me, a physical thing at the time. And she grew feelings, and I just like, yeah. And she had a boyfriend that she decided to go, you know, and dump to be with me. And and that's the thing, the average rapper would be like, oh, I got your chick, you know, I got your chick, and we da, da, da. like and it's crossed my mind a couple times because it's happened in single life, but it's not, but that's not what I want to portray, because there's emotions in that on both ends. Like, I like this person, we were really cool, but we didn't need to go there with each other. We shouldn't have. You had a boyfriend,
it was not for her to break up her relationship with her boyfriend. Wow.
Yeah, and then the last verse on that's funny, because there's a girl I used to work with. We met right around the time I became single, and we started to go off into a different type of situation where we were really close. Like, we became, like, really, really close, and it turned into a situation where it's like, it's more of a fantasy than anything. Like, we would do some interesting things over the phone together, and text each other.
You can elaborate. We love to hear the juicy stuff.
we would text each other, like, sexual stuff, be on the phone. She sent me pictures and all the time of stuff. And you know, the thing is, like, when I eventually left the job that I was at before, it was like, okay, well, we're not really, like, I don't really, you know, like, that's when everything actually got worse, because when we were working together, it wasn't like that. Like, it wasn't like that at all. Like, we had just started working together, and we were just cool. We were going to lunch sometimes, and we were hanging around each other. And at the time, I didn't want to be with her. I wanted to be with my ex. I wanted to get back with my ex and work it out with the mother of my child. And when I started to see that wasn't going to work, we started to get closer. We, like, hung out here and there once or twice, and we did a few things. But I just knew for a fact it really wasn't going to happen. Like, It was meant to be a fantasy. Some things are just meant to be a fantasy. And she was my exact kryptonite. Like, I put out on Twitter, like, the type of woman I'm looking for, which is, I do it because I think it's funny, but she was exactly the type of woman look-wise that I would go for. And personality-wise, she was goofy. She was everything that I would look for in a woman. But,
you've been a goofy woman that some people consider attractive at times. I can feel you and her on that, because I'm goofy as I don't know what. And go on.
No, it's just, you know, it's the thing is, like, that's one of the things that I, like, every quality that I tend to look for in a woman, including the craziness that makes for better sex, but it's like... But seriously, like, everything that was going on, you know, at that time, between me and her, we had a really strong connection. And, you know, at one point I just told her, I was like, I don't know if I can, you know, pursue a relationship with you, because I would rather, you know, like, my daughter was, you know, our daughter is still hasn't turned one yet. She doesn't turn one until next Friday. It was coming Friday.
Yeah,
so
I wanted to wish her a happy early birthday, too. Yeah.
No, thank you. You know,
and
yeah, it's been a year, and I think that's one thing that held me back initially and moving on from my ex, is that we have something together that that I can't get anywhere else. That's something that we built together. So for me to go and jump into something else with somebody else, like, you know, something else with somebody else that fast, I wasn't ready to do it, and I couldn't ask her to wait on me. So that verse.
Oh yeah, that really is a culture shock. Talking of culture shock, that's a culture shock to, you know, dive into a relationship that quick. Some people can deal with it, but yeah, that takes some prioritizing.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, you know. It's different, because like we still talk. Me and the person who I referenced in the third, the lady I referenced in the third verse of Piece of Me, we still talk. We talk this today. We talk all the time. She's one of actually, as far as I don't have a lot of quote unquote female friends, but she is definitely really close to me in regards to that, I guess, aspect. But she's getting ready to move to Texas, and it's funny because
Dallas.
I don't know where in Texas yet. She hasn't told me. We didn't talk about all that yet. She said she just put the plans in motion, and I felt like, and I told her, I said, I feel like you're only moving, you know, because like you got tired of waiting on me, and I was like, there's nothing I can really do, because I'm still not ready for that. And I was like, and I don't think.
Yeah, so getting in or out of a relationship with you, probably, yeah, you're so right, because if she was in a relationship with you, she probably would not be moving unless you were moving with her.
And that's the thing. I just, like, it's different. To give you an example, like, I know people. I'm personally in a situation where I see people who jump into another thing with somebody else that they don't even know. Like that, you know, you can meet somebody over social network and automatically build up some type of rapport, relationship with somebody, but you don't know them. Like, this is a girl who I was around 24/7. We're working and we built up a bond face to face, which that's different. You can talk on the phone with somebody 100% all the time, and that has no bearing on a face to face bond and, you know, dichotomy. And that's what was going on between me and her, and we had that. And even though we had that, I still wasn't, like, I wasn't ready.
Yeah,
and
it sounds like you guys have really pretty good chemistry. And really,
oh, we do. We really do. Like, you know, like I said, she has a lot of qualities that I would look for in a female, but I know for a fact, like I said, just the third verse of Piece of Me sums up everything. Like, I felt connection, like, but I knew it wasn't going to work. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes you meet somebody and they could be great, but it's like, this is not probably going to work. She's a little bit too crazy for me, maybe in some aspects, but I knew that wasn't going to work. And I figured the point of Piece of Me is if you just listen, I tell people, listen to my lyrics all the time, because everything is self-explanatory. Like, if you listen to the first verse, you know, if you listen to the first verse, I'm telling the mother of my child, like, look, you know, I'm trying to move on from this, but you're in reflective mode. You can't just be like, oh, this is it, whatever, you know, forget it, you know, like forget it. It's like, yeah, like, I might be bitter about a few things because the way certain stuff happened, you know, like, moving on ain't that easy. And then it's like, but you know what, if we got to close this chapter, here's a piece of me. I'll give you, like, the piece of me that I give to her would be a piece of my soul, because you have that. We have 8 years in, and we have a child together. So there's a piece of me.
Wow, 8 years
that lives,
of this.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a piece of me that's going to live through her forever because we have a child. So you can have a piece of my soul to take with you. And then in the second verse, I'm talking to somebody who I had a, you know, we had a good connection, and we've known each other for years, but we just reconnected recently, ever since I've been single, and we started something up that we probably shouldn't have started. And, you know, I was like, I do think about you sometimes, but here's a piece of my mind that you can take with you. You can't have my heart.
Yeah, but what about her? She broke up with her boyfriend. So what about that?
Well, the thing is that
she didn't talk with you beforehand. She just went ahead and broke off with him, and then said, "Oh, guess what? We broke up."
Well, it's funny. It's funny. She was dating somebody for years. Like I said, literally.
Really, you're not talking about a courtship. You're talking about really exclusive. Wow.
Yeah, she was. Like I said, the lyrics will tell you. Just pay attention to the lyrics. They'll tell you, like, she was dating somebody for years. And we just became cool, and I was like, I haven't seen you in years. Like, what's up? And she was like, oh, okay, let's trade numbers. And I even gave you the timeline. I was like, I think we met in December. Nah, it was a snowstorm. I think it's February. So this is going back to February this year, where we reconnected and we were talking, and you know, it eventually got to the point where I wasn't going to go that route. And it's just when a certain event had happened that let me. That gave me the extra push I needed to go farther with any female, because I wasn't out really running wild or doing anything with anybody, because I was still in my mind thinking that I was going to get back together with the mother of my child. And then when something happened,
exactly, because I know the last time you talked with us, it sounded like it was a possibility that you and Zuri's mother would get back together. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know,
you enjoyed
a single
life, but you also were open to you two getting back together too.
Yeah, well, to be completely honest, I'm always honest. Me and you know, my child, we were still physically dealing with each other on a consistent basis around the time of that last interview, even though we weren't together. We were still physically involved. So in my mind, I was like, I'm with her. I could talk to as many women as possible. I don't, like, just talking. Like, at a certain level, at a certain point, I wouldn't go past. And I was like, when she goes past that point, if she decides to do that, that's when I'll go past that point. And when I found out, the way I found out that she went past that point and she was, you know, like, she was somebody else, I was like, okay, well, I give no fucks anymore. I was like, I'll just do what the fuck I feel like. And uh-huh. At that time, it was an actually angry reaction. Like, I have yet to begin to tell you what really went down with that situation, but it's a situation where I was holding myself back from doing anything because I really didn't want to at the time. I was like, I didn't want to be single. I wanted to, you know, like, we have a child here that's, like, less than 1 year old. Like, we have, you know, opportunity to work together and, you know, work together to build up. Like, it ain't going to be easy to build everything up. But, you know, like, it takes to build a family up, it takes time. It takes effort. And I was willing to put that effort and time in, and I don't think that she was willing to put that in. I think it was easier. I don't know how. I still don't even know how to understand it. Like, I don't know how it's easy for somebody to walk away from a situation like this with a young child, with, you know, like, you know, a shared home, you know, things like this that we have. It's, I don't understand it because I didn't want to do it, you know.
Yeah.
I think it comes to a point where with women that I've talked to who have children, if a man messes up initially in the beginning, no matter what it is, especially if it wasn't a physical thing, if you even flirt with another woman, maybe go too far with that, which is something that I admittedly did. Like, this is like 2012 when it happened, where I was doing business with somebody and it just kind of went a little too far as in the conversation, and she found out, and that's where all the issues started from. And I'm looking at it like we're just going to disregard our entire family over something that's really small and stupid when you look back on things. And I think hindsight is most important. If you look back on, if you can look back on something and say, man, that wasn't that serious, you know, like, man, it wasn't that serious, you know. And I think that's what I look back on. And when she was angry about me, I'm like, it wasn't that serious. Like, and but she takes off. She's like, this is what did it, and I can never get over this. And I'm like, really, really? That's what it is, and she'll tell me you'll never understand it.
What you thought she should have had difficulty with, she probably it was no problem with. But my things that you looked at as minor, she was like, this is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think that happens. You know, I think it happens sometimes where you're looking, where I look at things differently because I'm thinking if I was in a situation or predicament, I wouldn't hold it that much against her. Like that, because we've had situations like that in the past on both ends. She was like, it's different because we have a child now. And I was like, I understand that, but you don't understand what goes into a man's, like for a man who's never had a child before, who, you know, this is your first child and you didn't have a father around, this pressure. And then to go a long time without sex, which is ridiculous for somebody who has consistently had it for years and most of his life. So, and that's the thing, it's like, I've talked about this on the albums. Like, I never touched another woman this entire time we were doing, you know, like, we're together.
I commend you on that. Wow, you're definitely a monogamous type of guy.
And that's the thing. I just prefer to be that way. But you can't. But the thing is, like, in our relationship anyway, she's always looked at me like, I don't believe you.
You're in. You know, I know people, any industry, people will, you know, dip outside, men and women. But just saying, you are definitely around. You don't live a life like just a normal guy. You are around attractive women, which you discussed during the last talk we had. So to really been committed to your woman the way you were all those years, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing where I like, it's all about which situations you put yourself in, and because I had a family, I wasn't going to put myself in any particular situation that would jeopardize it. And then the one time I did, I caught myself before it went, in my opinion, it didn't go that far. I was like, I'm not going to let this go this far. And I was just like, I just want to get back to where we used to be before. Because the first month you have a child is rough. It's rough. And the average person does not take that into consideration, and I didn't take it into consideration until I actually lived it, and then I realized, like, I just wasn't mentally prepared for everything that was going on. And you can tell somebody this all time and time again, but she's not going to listen to it because she's thinking you should have been this and you should have been that, and you're not allowed to make mistakes. And when that happens, that's not fair to anybody else, because if she was to make mistakes and I was to hold it against her, she would say the same thing. It's not fair.
Oh.
But when it's on me, when it's on the guy, a lot of times that happens anyway, when it's on the man to make a mistake, it's never fair. If a woman makes a mistake, it's like, well, I'm sorry, this happened, whatever. But, and I've noticed that's happened just everybody I surround myself with, not just in my personal situations, but people I surround myself with, they have this happen, and that, you know, they're being looked at, being looked at by people, you know, it's just looked at by people like, oh, you can't make a mistake. We're human. We're going to make mistakes.
Yeah, we're human, and we have our flaws. And listen, those of you that are listening called in, if you would like to make a comment, please signify by pressing 1, because we would love to have you to be a part of the conversation. So, because I'll put you on air anyway. So go ahead and press 1 to let me know that you want to talk with us. All right, if you have a question for True God or Moral or a comment. Okay. I didn't want to interrupt, but we have callers, so if anyone want to make a comment, I'll just let them know. Please let us know.
Yeah, well, I appreciate all the callers, but it's just one of those things, you know, where a lot of things went on at the time, and I'm so open and honest about everything. I have no problem at all telling people what happened, because, you know, the little mistake that I made, I don't look at it. Like, somebody was asking me, one of my friends, she's like, do you feel like you cost yourself your family? I said, no, I don't. I said, because I put in enough work to whatever little mistake that I felt I made, like, and I feel like I told my friend, I said, I don't think I was that great of a father the first month. I wasn't that great of a father. I knew I wasn't. Like, you have to understand yourself.
You was
know.
Excited, Father. I know that much. So you,
like,
but you
was
learning
excited.
And getting used to it.
Yeah, and it takes time. You can't adjust. You know, it's an adjustment. You're talking about someone who's never had really any male influences growing up, you know, automatically jumping into a full-time role of a father. And at the first month, I wasn't that good at it. But you can't tell anybody else this, because if they jump into it as their motherly instinct, if that goes differently, then it's like, well, why aren't you doing the same thing that I'm doing? And you can't. It's unfair to somebody who you know, has this overwhelming feeling of, I've never done this before. Let me see if I can do this right. Or I'm doing something wrong. I'm messing up. Or if you make one mistake, you're hard on yourself, because you're like, man, I should have known better than that. So it got to a point where I needed to step back myself and be like, okay, let me get this right. And unfortunately, a lot of times the mother in the situation is not going to give you that. You know, and I've seen it happen to a lot of my friends, where they want to be with their child, or they want to be with their child's mother, and they're like, well, no, you did this or you did that. And then it's like, well, I know, like, this is in the beginning. Like, can we get a chance? Like, no, you did this, so that's the end of it. Like, we got a child we're going to raise for 18, 21
but
years.
But disregarding anything that they have done. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It happens like that. You know? It happens. I think that's the weirdest thing for me is to see you know.
That's a good point, because some of us females might not realize why our relationships don't work out, or why it's complicated, those that are looking to find a relationship, and those who are hoping that Cupid might strike, like me, anytime. But but that's good that you point that out, ladies and guys. Well, you guys already know this, but some of us ladies might not realize this, that we put your faults and your flaws and your mistakes in the center of the table, but we like keep ours under the table. So we feel like we need to do a lot of self-discovery, if that's what a lot of us are doing. That we're perfect, but yet we're promoting the flaws of our men. We need to do a little self-discovery and self-research on how we act and react within our relationships, and when we're attempting to attract loving relationships.
I mean, I think that's the thing. I don't like to point fingers at people for a lot of situations. So, like, I always take the blame for my part and everything. But I know for a fact the architect of everything really falling apart, that wasn't me. I know for a fact. Like, I know this because I lived it. And, you know, that's something a lot of people don't, you know, think about, you know. Like, they don't think about that. Like, when you go through a situation, people like to point fingers. Like, this is this way because you caused it. And I'll look at it and say, okay, I played a role in this, and you played a role in this, and we both made mistakes. And you know, like, we both made mistakes in this, and let's find a way to make it better. And when I'm trying to make it better and you're not giving me the effort back, it takes two. So if it doesn't take two, if it takes two and you're not giving me the energy that's needed on your end too, then it's going to naturally just fall apart. And then when that happens, I can say, well, I tried my best. You didn't give me enough effort, and you decided to go about it in a way you probably shouldn't. But to you, it's justified because you justified it in your own mind. And that's where everything really turned out and was kind of messed up. But I mean, you know, it is what it is now. You know, the album is where you can hear everything in more and more and more and more detail, you know.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about other songs. And Soul Revival 2 is dropping this fall, right?
Yeah, it's coming in the fall. Definitely coming in the fall.
It's been so long. I'm far away. I know it's just a few months away, but seems so far because we definitely want more, like, right now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about Soul Revival 2 is that I wanted to, you know, just basically give people a reflection of me. I do that on every album, but this is different. Like I said, it's my first album as a father and my first album as a single man. And there's a song on the album that's called Reset. And in parentheses on the title, it's called New Pussy. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, and I did that because I was like, what's something that'll catch somebody's attention? I was like, the word, you know, new pussy, you know, like I think people would just grab people's attention. And everybody I've told about the song, they're like, oh, shit, like, I did not expect you to have that as a title. But the song itself, that's the thing. The song itself is all about redemption, which is the album is about. It's a story. It's about redemption and all this different stuff. Like with Reset, like, the, you know, Reset or New Pussy, whatever you want to call it, I'm taking a song, and, you know, the hook is like, you know, you want to be married with some kids, the best gift of all, but when you've got it, guess you're more inclined to risk it all for some new pussy, so it's time to reset. And then it goes, you know, like this, you know, you're at the club trying to do it all, and, you know, this paycheck, you've blown through it all. Like, I'm talking about my life and other people's lives who I've seen and been around who have families and wives and kids, but they'll risk it to chase women, you know. And then you got the single guy, like, who I guess would be myself now, who's out at the club, and you're looking for something. You're not sure what you're looking for, but you're looking for something. So you're going out to the bar, you're spending money, you're popping bottles, you're meeting women, you're fucking different women. Like, this is all going on. And it's a concept record in the point where the first verse is me talking about my single life at the club, women passing me drinks saying, you want a drink or you want to do this or let's go home together. And it's like, you don't want to be a part of that. And then the second verse is about being a married man or being an attached person who just can't help but go after that, you know, like that itch is still there to go after and chase women because the allure of chasing women is so alluring. If you want to
and confirming
people,
that you have it. You know, some people want to know, male and female and all in between. A lot of people really want to know, do I still have it? You know? Do I still have it?
people like to
know that after being in a relationship a long time or being out of the, you know, dating scene. They want to know, hey, do I still have it? So that sounds like what you're talking about with that experience. I'm like, do I still have it? Let me find out. Yeah,
you know,
I still got it.
Yeah, and that's what that you know, that's what that's about in the second verse. And in the third verse is basically me kind of reflecting, thinking like, why am I in this situation? Like maybe I'm tripping because this ain't the life that I would have chose, or maybe I'm being haunted by this chapter that I couldn't close. Like when I take those two lyrics and put them together, like what I'm talking about, you know, like I don't want this single life that I'm living now. Like, but I'm still haunted by this chapter that I probably won't be, like, I can't really move on because this is there's something that's going to be haunting me for 18 years. I have to deal with the mother of my child for the next 18 years. Like, and I have to see the woman that I loved enough to say, let's create a child, let's be together forever. I have to see her almost every day, all the time. And so it's tough. And then I talk about that in Les Verse about, you know, like if I tell myself in the song, I was like, that's a funny story because I think I'm running from love because every woman who I encounter in single life automatically gravitates to me so much that they start to fall for me or want to be around me more. And that's not where I'm at. And I feel like I'm running from love.
And it sounds like you really do care about others' feelings. Because, you know, there are some people out there who are like, okay, well, I didn't make them fall in love. But it's not like you generally care about people's feelings and that falling in love process.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I would prefer to be in a relationship, you know, but... And I meet women on a daily, like everywhere I go. Like I go to McDonald's. I don't even eat McDonald's that much, but I go to McDonald's. I meet women at McDonald's. Like I go to Target, meet a woman at Target. Go to Walmart, meet a woman at Walmart. Like I walk down the street, meet a woman walking down the street. Like and I go to the clubs, I go to the bars, I meet women there, and go to the mall. I meet, like, everywhere I go, I can meet. You know, I don't have any issue as far as getting women in that department, but. It's just that you like my boy has when I had my old phone, I had 367 numbers in my phone. I'd say 90% of them were from women. I still see a lot of women who, you know, but it was nothing. Like, I would text a woman maybe for like a day and I would get bored and I would never text her again. I would see her again and I would act like I didn't know her because I didn't want that conversation about why didn't you text me. And it gets kind of annoying to me because in single life I'm like, it's just so much easier if I was in a relationship, but I can't force it, you know. I've added before, I've only dated black women in my life, all ethnic women in my life up until I became single this time, and everybody was like, try something new. So I started dating every type of woman that there is, you know, ethnic, white women, you know, Middle Eastern women, just black, you know, white, Latin, everything. And that's where those 367 numbers come from, is because of the fact I was everything. And that was over like 3 or 4 months.
I mentioned one of your tweets a few months ago, because I remember seeing one of your tweets and you mentioned the fact that you and your friends had been, you know, interacting with non-black women and women of different races too, and I think that's a good, you know, you're a single guy, so I think that's a good thing and a healthy thing.
Well,
in my opinion, not that you won't need my approval, but I mentioned that you had mentioned that you, that because you interact and dating and seeing those women, that doesn't mean that more than likely when you do decide to be in a committed relationship, you said something like you more than likely would be with a black woman or ethnic woman. You remember that tweet? My friends and I are out partying with women of different races and white women and different races, but you said that, I remember this tweet because I mentioned it on my show, that the next show I had done, because I guess it was on my relationship talk show that airs on Wednesdays. And you said, but more than likely I probably, but you never know. You know, love is colorblind. But your tweet said that you probably would marry or be in next committed relationship would be with a black woman, but that you were having fun,
you know,
with women of, you know, different races. But
well,
you never
thing,
know.
Right?
You know, love is colorblind. So
I put it to you like this: I've talked to you know, white women in this whole thing, and I've enjoyed my fun with them. And one thing I know is they get attached very easily. They get attached very easily to me. I mean, that happens with most of the women I talk to anyway, but they get,
yeah.
They really get attached. Like, but they
your
really
hands
get,
are full with the black sisters, huh? Now you got everybody.
You know, it's funny. I don't know. You know, it's funny because, like, when I did the dealings I've had with white women, it's a big... It's a funny thing. It's a really funny thing because I enjoy my time with them and the fun aspect, the physical aspect, sexual aspect, like, you know, drinking with them and going out and stuff like that. Like, that's fun for me. But in the essence of talking about, you know, real conversations and having, there's like one white woman who I've had a really, really good conversation with, but we butted heads, you know, and we had some fun together, and we butted heads because of the fact, like, I say what I want. I'm going to say what I want. I'm honest. Like, if you don't like it, you don't have to be around. So
you sound like my attorney, my friend Jay in Dallas. He's from Arkansas, but he's a Caucasian guy. He's my attorney. He's my friend, but he has the same persona as you. I'm going to say what I feel, and he encourages me to be as honest. And I thought I was a pretty honest person, but just like you, he encourages me to be honest. Just be honest. Don't sugarcoat stuff. But back to what you were saying, everybody can't take that. And back to you and her, would say what you feel, and she would.
Like, I would say what I want, and I use whatever language I feel like using. And she was just like, oh, I think you should know better than say this. And I'm like, I'm gonna say what the fuck I want. And we you know, and we bonded, you know, we bonded over so much different things, like political stuff, hip hop. Like, she liked the same type of stuff. And I was like, she's cool, but I was like, I don't think I could see myself in a relationship with her. Like, and that's one thing, and that's why I'm honest with myself to the point where I felt like I have no problem going out dating and you know, having something casual with a woman of any race, as long as you look good and you're cool, you know, whatever. But when it comes to somebody who I need to be with long term, I know for a fact that only, more than likely, either a black or at the very least a Latina woman could handle me. My personality is very dominant, and all the white women, honestly, that I've talked to, I've been able to almost truthfully, I'll be honest, I've been able to walk over most of them. So that's why I know for a fact. That's why I know for a fact. It's not for me. With a black woman, it's just, it's different. It's different. It's different. It's so different. And you know, I've talked to a lot of Asian chicks.
Even with the goofy ones like me.
you know,
yeah, because you're going to be you regardless.
and I've had Asian women who, you know, I've talked to, and they're very sassy. But I'm like, I don't take them seriously, so that's not going to work. But they're fun, you know, like I'm having fun right now. It's the summertime, you know what I mean? Like, it's the summertime. I'm going out with my boys, and we're all, you know, we crew deep, and we're the life of the party everywhere we go. We attract women everywhere we go. So
I know.
It
sounds like you guys have so much fun.
I mean, we have fun. We do have fun, you know, and we're life of the party. Like, I never danced in my life. I was just a two-stepper. And then I still don't really dance. I just two-step with what I call black man rhythm, and I have a lot of white friends now. So I have like two groups of friends. I have my black friends, and we go to the city clubs, and we get into fights, and we get into stupid stuff. So I stop hanging out with them a lot, and I go with my white friends, and automatically you're white, or like white, Middle Eastern, Asian friends, and automatically I become the center of attention. Like, I don't look like them. I don't wear the tighter clothes. I don't come off the same way that they do. Like, my walk is different. You can tell, you know, I don't use the word swag that much, but if you want to talk about it, like, my swag is a whole another different level than everybody else in my crew.
Your swag is on point, huh?
Yeah, it's just different. It's just different, you know, it's different. So when they see me walk into the bar, walk into, you know, clubs, like, I'm always fresh when I go out, you know, got the cologne on. Like, I just go fresh. And as soon as I walk into the club, or to the bar, it's just instant attention comes to you. So when that happens, you know, we get a lot of attention just being on you know, on the floor and partying and stuff like that. And it's fun. You know, it's fun. It's fun, but it gets old. You know? It gets really old. And I know for a fact, say September, by the time this album comes out, I have a feeling I might possibly either be in a relationship or near, or I've met the woman who I will be in a relationship with. Prophecy.
Wow.
And I talk prophecy and everything. I predict everything that's happened to me. Everything that's happened I'm living through right now, I predicted it before. If you listen to DOA and listen to Z, the song that I dedicated to my unborn child before she was born. But when I did DOA, if you listen to the song, I'm talking in the last verse about what I don't want to happen and what I envision happening between me and her mom. And it basically went exactly the way I said it was. And that's my fault for thinking that ahead of time. So I might have been the cause of that just a little bit. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So it's a situation where now I know for a fact I'm going to probably wind up in a relationship a lot sooner than what I envisioned. I was like, 2013, I'm not doing nothing as far as, you know, relationships. But I feel like I'm getting there because I'm starting to meet women who I do actually connect with. And me meeting women now that I connect with, it gives me that feeling of, like, because I was like, when am I going to find somebody who I connect with as much as I did the mother of my child? Because that was a once-in-a-lifetime connection that I thought. And I could be right, you know, I could be right. That could be a once-in-a-lifetime connection, and I could have an entirely different connection with somebody else that's just as strong, but in a different way. Because mm-hmm. I was looking at 8 years of being around somebody, and you can look at my YouTube channel. I've got videos of us, you know, together, out, doing, you know, different things, you know, going out to the mall together or going to wrestling events together. Like, we did everything together. Like, that was my life for 7.5, nearly 8 years, was her.
Wow.
Like, we struggled together. We were homeless together. We, you know, like, she was there from when I first started going into the studio to make music. She was there for everything, you know, like, she was there. So to take somebody
who's
been there.
That's for the next talk, because you have never shared with us that you two have been homeless together. You lived it up together.
Yeah, I can delve into it a little bit, you know, like, well, I say homeless, like, we was, like, it's a situation where we were really young at the time, and, you know, when you're really young, you make a lot of rational decisions. So me, you know, it's like, oh, like,
well, this very important issue to me has always been, wow, and to hear that, and that love, your love outweighed even your homelessness. You were together. And what happened?
You know, that happens, though. It happens that we were struggling together, you know, like, I sold everything that I had initially. Like, I was living good, you know, I was in the street at the time, so cash was coming in really good. We're talking, like, thousands of dollars, and then...
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, yeah.
You know, when I was in the streets, things were different, and then at the time when I was in the street, you know, I was still technically a minor back then, before everything got serious, and then I had cash stashed away in my room, and then when I turned 18, I met, you know, the mother of my child. Just met her. We had both turned 18. We just met. And when we had just met, it's like, you know, like, I had all this cash, and then I go back to get it, and it's gone because my mother took it. My mother took it from me. Like, and that's my fault for keeping, you know, and she took it, and she actually
remember,
like,
shared that with us. You shared that event with us before. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, all that money is missing from her, you know, and she took it, and I was left to be like, okay, well, you know, my ex, like, well, your mother, my child, she needed somewhere to go. She needed somewhere to stay. And, you know, I went ahead, you know, for myself, and I made the sacrifices for us. You know, I could have easily, I won't even say for us, I did it for her, and she would never understand this, because we talked about it, and because I'm not going to lie, I wasn't fully sold on being out there with her 100%, you know, but I made the decision. I said, I'm going to trade everything I have in this house, and I'll sell it, I'll get rid of it, I'll go out and hustle some more, but she didn't want me to be in the streets anymore, so it's like, mm-hmm. She's like, I don't want to be a part of this, so it's like, I got to make a choice, so I chose not to be in the streets anymore, to keep her safe away from everything and make sure she's protected wherever she goes. If she has to go work somewhere in the city, she's protected. Nobody will ever bother you, you know. And there's so many crazy stories of where she would disappear sometimes and you know, we would get into fights and arguments and stuff like that. And we would be sleeping on park benches, sleeping in hallways of apartment buildings.
Oh.
I slept in, it's funny because I get kicked out of my mother's house and I slept in her hallway for 2 months with the mother of my child, and she called the cops on us. I fought the cops for this girl. So, you know, it's different. And I know I didn't get taken to jail, which is funny. I probably should have, but, you know, it's a situation where I put in so much effort, and she doesn't understand. You know, like, she doesn't look at it like that. And this is early on in the beginning. Like, I've gone to bat for my family against her. I alienated myself from my entire family because they didn't like her.
Wow.
They didn't like her. And I did that. And she was like, we used to argue about it. And she would say, I always feel like I'm alone in this. And I used to look at her and wonder, like, I don't know what you see. And I think it may be issues from her past that maybe have made it that way. Or I don't know, you know, whatever the case may be. I was like, you can never look at it like that because I've given up so much. So much that I would never be willing to give up before. I'd give all this up because of the fact that's how deeply I love you and care about you. And it would never happen that way, ever, ever. Like, I'll give up shelter. Like, if you're hungry, you can have my food.
Wow.
You know, and I pass that on to my daughter because there's days where I might not eat, but my daughter has to eat. If it's that bad, you know, if it's that bad where I don't have it in my pocket, my daughter can eat. Hey, you know what? Her mother can eat, even at this point. That's my loyalty to the people that if I give you a part, like a piece of me, and I actually care about you, then I'll ride for you. But that's the thing. She didn't look at it like that because okay, we might have some issues here and there. So to a woman's mind, I guess that automatically nullifies I guess what emotions or what I showed you before. And there's some mistakes that I made during this period of time, a lot of mistakes. Like, I was still talking to some exes back then in the beginning. Like, I was fresh out. Like, I was talking to, like, ten different girls at the same time when we first met. So you take
some
time.
Whoa, a player.
I mean, I was, if you want to call it that. Like, I only had one relationship prior to that. So I didn't know the protocol of what a relationship was supposed to be. Like, I never had a girlfriend. I had women who might consider themselves to be my girlfriend, but I didn't consider them that. So when I jumped into a long-term relationship, I didn't know the protocol what I was supposed to do. Like, all I knew was that, you know, like, the homeless stuff wasn't nothing to me at the time because I came from, like, sleeping on park benches, for, you know, being out there on the streets for 72 hours in the same clothes because you hustling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just where I come from. So that was nothing mm-hmm. to me. But to her, you know, she was like, you know, she was willing to be there with me. And I kind of realized now that what I took from her as loyalty, you know, and being down, like, that's just her personality. She gravitates to whoever, you know, will give her that kind of attention and time. And when that happens, you know, when that happens with her having that attention and having that time and getting, you know, getting all of that stuff or whatever, like, she becomes a different person. You know, she became a different person. Like, she's a different person now than where she was, like, when we were together. You know, and at the same time, I guess I can't fault you for that because she's a chameleon. And most women that I come across are chameleons. If you take me out of a relationship with this person, with her.
It's the environment that they're in.
And that's the thing. I'm not like that. Wherever environment I'm in, wherever I'm going to go, I'm going to be me. I'm not going to change up who I am to fit in with this crowd or to fit in with this person over here because this person's a clown and you want to be a clown like him. Excuse me if I'm getting a little angry. Just be being honest. Like, and that's what I see when I look at her. I'm like, you're not the same person. There's elements of the same person there when you're talking to me, but when I hear you talking to other people, if I hear you or see you how you are online now, you're not the same person. You ain't the same person. And you can tell yourself, I'm still me, but nobody knows you as well as I do. I've seen you at your best. I've seen you at your very worst. Like, and the thing is, nobody knows me like she does. You see me? And she was like, you changed. She changed to me. I said, you know? But she told me I changed. I said, of course I changed. Because when I was in a relationship, I'm on the couch with you. We in the bedroom watching TV together. We're going on dates. That don't exist no more. So if that don't exist no more, then I'm going out, I'm partying. I'm meeting different women. You know? I have to change. If I don't change, then I'm stuck in the same predicament in the same box.
Exactly.
And
changing for the better. Positive change.
You know?
Exactly.
You know, so it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things that I have that gives me perspective, perspective and logic. I talk about this all the time. Like, it gives me perspective to look at things differently. Like, I had to be the bigger man in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I had to be. Nobody, and she probably won't look at it like that, but I had to be because the way, you know, when we were still dealing with each other, I found out that she was in a quote-unquote relationship with some guy she met off of Twitter who lives 20 states away.
Whoa.
And the way I found out was through somebody telling me, yo, check Twitter. What's going on with her? I'm like, what do you mean? I thought she was on vacation with her homegirls. She's with some ugly-ass dude in the hotel. And I'm not going to lie.
And on Twitter?
Yeah.
No way.
I didn't know. Like, it was, you know, it was that blatant, and that blatant disrespect had me calling up people who I don't normally talk to, and I'm like, yo, let's track her, find out where the fuck she at, find out where he at. He's like, because they both going to have a problem. Like, and
whoa.
This is, and I can admit this on the show. I don't admit too much of this anywhere, but I had 4 or 5 people strapped up waiting outside of the Holiday Inn in Baltimore ready to
take. Oh, no, you sound like OJ.
I did, but at the same time, there was a point where I was ready to do it, and I was like, this motherfucker's going to pay. Like, you don't disrespect me. Like, for
real
one, like, this
style.
Is...
Man.
I didn't want to have flashbacks to stuff that I used to do before, so I caught myself.
I hear you.
And the only reason why I caught myself is because of the fact when I found out, it was early on in the day. My daughter was still sitting here. My daughter was sitting here, and she was playing with her toys. And that's the only thing that stopped me. That's it, because I said, it comes back to me, I'm in jail, or her mom's gone.
But your homies had your back. They like, just let us know, huh?
that's different, because the homies I'm talking to, like, the people I hang around on a daily basis are not the homies, those homies. Huh? Like, the homies who I don't hang around very often, I may go see if I go to East Side, maybe go to the West Side, see certain people. You know, like, I'll go see them, and they like, yo, if you need something, they always looking to fuck something up. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a situation where I automatically.
Nothing you knew then. Well, let me just go on and do my thing then, huh?
Yeah, I looked at my daughter and I was like, this is stupid.
No need to stress me, huh? Getting in trouble over that.
You know, it, this is stupid. You know, it's very stupid. Like, I'm open and honest, so I don't have a problem sharing that because, I didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing to incriminate somebody if nothing, because nothing happened. I caught myself, you know. Intent, there was any intent that might have been there. I let it go because you had to be.
Yeah, I would have been so brokenhearted to hear that. So I'm glad you remain conscious, you know,
I talked about it.
But I know that was devastating to get that news and then to get it that way.
I talk about it on the album. It's funny, I talk about it on the album because I said in the song, I was like, I almost threw away everything just by being irrational. And that's how I look at it, because it's that easy to go back to that place where you might have been years ago.
Thank you for sharing that, because a lot of people need to know it's so important to stay rational, and regardless of the irrationality that's going on around us. Stay rational and stay out of trouble.
Yeah, and I've been trying to, give advice to all of the young little homies who's coming up and just letting them know, like, you know, like my dude, like, it look easy, you know, like, I still visit the hood a lot now. I didn't, when I was in a relationship, I didn't visit the hood very much. She wanted me to be around. I'll come around and I know where the money's at. I know where everything is at. I don't allow myself to become a part of it, but I'll come around and look out for the little homies and go see my cousin who live there or the people I know. And I'll go see them and I'll say, look, like, it's a better way than this, you know, like, it's a better way than this. A lot more we can do with our lives than this, you know.
Yeah,
and I'll try to put them on game.
I was thinking when Zuri's mother encouraged you to get off, you know, from what you were doing, and she probably saved your life.
Oh, easily.
Prevented you getting in circumstances that weren't good for you.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I owe her a lot. You know, I owe her a lot. You know, I owe her a lot in the sense of helping me grow to where I am now. The same way I feel like she owes me just as much as not more for helping her grow in a lot of ways.
Supportive of one another. It sounds like you're doing a great job co-parenting.
You want to say that? Yeah. it is a situation where like here's the thing, like, you know, obviously she's in a quote unquote relationship now, and she's willing to take a week and leave. And go away and be
with the Twitter guy or someone else.
With the Twitter guy, yeah. With his funny ass. Yeah. I call him. I say he a bitch ass nigga. That's what I call him. That's what he is. You know, it's funny. You know, it's funny because I just think he's corny. Like, cause he's a Twitter dude. Like, he lives on Twitter. Like, I tweet. For entertainment and to drop knowledge, he tweets
exactly.
Life. So I was like, and that's what she wanted to do. Like, and that's her choice, you know. you know, that's her choice. You know, that's what she wants to do. But I was like, she goes away for 4 or 5 days at a time to be with him. And she's like, I don't go out any other time. You're always out. And I don't go out of the house until my daughter's asleep most of the time. I wait until she sleeps, then I'll go out. It's different, you know. Yeah, like she goes away for a week, and I told her, I was like, look, you know, you go out for a whole week, you know what I'm saying? Like you're going for a whole week. I can't be away from my child for a whole day. It kills me. You know, and it's different. But she's like, well, I don't get this, and I deserve this. And women do this. I know most women who have kids that I know, they say this all the time, like, I need a break, I need a vacation. Like, I want my child 24/7 most of the time. 98% of the time I'm around, even if I'm Mother's Day, I'm still there. So, like, when I hear women who push this child out of their body say, I need a break, and I'm like, there's no breaks in life.
Yeah, think about women like me who love to have a child before a clock stops ticking. You know, yeah, like, what?
Like, everybody's,
yeah. What?
And everybody's different, you know. There's everybody.
And everybody need a break. And everybody need their me time, you know. It's true
that's
enough.
Postpartum. There's different things. There's like postpartum. You know, there's like I've seen this. I've seen
and
women
who. Serious.
Yeah, I've seen women who've had children, and they'll be like, oh well, you know, I'm still young and vibrant, and like I think having a child automatically changes their mental on a lot of things. And I've heard the mother of my child say this, like, I'm still young, and I feel like that's where she is now, is she's trying to tell herself, I'm not old, or and she's not. I told her, you're not old at all, like, don't feel that way. But, you know, maybe I can't reassure her the way that this corny ass motherfucker can. So maybe that's better for her, you know. Like, and that's the thing, if that's what she chooses to do, I can't stop that. So more power to you. Like, it won't change the fact that I think they're both corny as hell and they're both clowns for that. You know, like my anger will never leave on that, because I think the way they
were
about it.
We're saying best wish to Zuri's mother and her endeavors.
You know, good luck on everything. Good luck on everything else. It's like, but as far as that goes, I'm never gonna be like cool with that, because for one, I was like, I say this in the song, piece of me say, bring that nigga near my daughter, I'll kill him. I won't even blink.
Well, speaking of Piece of Me, we played it on the top of the show, so is it cool to play it now again?
You sure can. You can go ahead and play that right now.
Listen to the lyrics, everyone, and thank you for everyone that's in the chat room and called in to listen. And those of you online, hey, probably will put you on air, and thank you for tuning in. Here's Piece of Me, True God.
I think there's a perception of love full of conception. When it starts to break down, you'll see the time that you've invested. There's no natural selection. If feelings come and go, there's no protection. So even hurt will in time become accepted. And so while I sit here just reading books to my daughter, looking around the room, seeing everything that we bought her. Flashbacks to her mom giving birth inside of the water. Fast forward to present day and his family's facing slaughter. Remember what I taught her, never thought she would harm her. All is hurt and resentment, perhaps I gave her incentive. So now I'm a baby father, instead of being a husband. We both stubborn and petty, I'm ready to find redemption. She's ready to find attention, couldn't see her intention. She seems to have a new man, nothing I could do in prevention. But you live your life, though it ain't as short as we think. Bring that nigga near my daughter, I'll kill him, won't even blink. I'm watching you moving backwards, she thinks it's cool to be ratchet. While hair and skin might be natural, image is something practiced. So is she faking the actual? Or maybe I'm just bitter while painting a clearer picture, cause moving on is impractical. So is this a heartbreak? Maybe it isn't known. It's probably karma, I've just started a couple heartbreaks of my own. And so, before you leave and before we create issues, here, there's a piece of my soul you can take with you. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a keepsake for you to hold if you were seeking me. Before I go, I gotta leave you with a piece of me. I guess that everything was nothing like it seemed to be. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So
I'm giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. I guess that everything's nothing like it seemed to be. How did we come about? Truth be told, I cannot remember. Maybe I do a little. I think we met in December. Scratch that, there was a snowstorm, thinking it's February. We known each other for years, so that timing ain't necessary. What's odd is that you liked me for years and I never noticed. Well, maybe I saw the signs, but on you I just wasn't focused. You had a boyfriend initially, with who you had some history. Together for a couple years, but you don't think it's meant to be. So we end up chilling while we did, it's still a mystery. Then you had started kissing me, lies we crossed them essentially. I'm in your room on top of you, caught inside of your wetness. This nigga's calling your phone, right then I start to regret this. Next morning you break up with him, hoping he gets the message. Say you got some heavy feelings for me, you want to express it. But shit, I didn't feel the same, I just let it continue. Kiss your neck to not look into your eyes whenever I'm in you. There's guilt inside of my heart, I wasn't thinking with that. Her pussy so tight and wet, that's what keeps on bringing me back. Sometime later she's in search of commitment I couldn't give to her. And at this point relationships only create a prisoner. She's got her own place, she's asking me can I live with her. She said I got a heart, but in mind she's only a visitor. So though at times a nigga may miss you, here's a piece of my mind that you can take with you. True. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me, a keepsake for you to hold if you were seeking me. Before I go, I gotta leave you with a piece of me. I guess that everything's nothing like it seemed to be. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. I guess that everything's nothing like it seemed to be. We met at work, she said she's looking for her Mr. Right. I'm staring at her thinking, damn, this girl's my kryptonite. Red bone, fat ass, pretty feet. Started talking every day and at a point the shit gets deep. We daily texting and chatting and soon everybody starts to think that we're an item. Blame me for letting it happen. I'm tripping since she's older, thinking this ain't perfect timing. On the dance floor at the Christmas party, we touching and grinding. Watched her cry inside the cafe, she sang, which was rare. She used to be in the band, but stopped singing cause no one cared. Well, maybe that's a bit harsh, she just never saw success. Became a fan of D.A.R. and said with talent I was blessed. Conversations heating up, late nights and talking sex. Said the way I used to word things would quickly make a wet. Fast forward, shit done changed and shit now we barely talking. She may text me every now and then but really isn't often. She said you might be the one, but I'll bond is way too close. She sent me news the next day, so I'm confusing her approach. Shit is meant to be a fantasy and simply nothing more. Phone sex and freaky texting, but that's all that we explore. Can't lie, I felt connection, but just knew it wouldn't work. If we tried, it wouldn't last, so I risk us getting hurt, Maybe in the future I may get you, but here's a piece of imagination you can take with you. I'm saying, so I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me, a keepsake for you to hold if you were seeking me. Before I go, I gotta leave you with a piece of me. I guess that everything's nothing like it seemed to be. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. So I'm just giving you a piece of me, a piece of me. I guess that everything's nothing like it seemed to be.
Reach for the top.
You know, that's one thing about the album itself is that the way Soul Rival 2 is structured is as a story, and Piece of Me is like almost near the end, close to the end of the album because it's a journey. So like I'm starting off, you know, like the album itself starts off with me kind of just like welcoming the listener back to, you know, I guess you could say like a day at the office with True God on the music tip, like it's a lot of aggressive, you know, hardcore content, revolutionary stuff that they used to from me. Huh. And then, you know, like there's a song on there that's called Authentic, and like the hook, you know, is like the best way to live life is authentic. And with that song, I'm just kind of going at everything, you know. I'm talking about like fuck the mainstream because, you know, we're creating our own. You know, you can call us underground. We're creating our own mainstream. So that's what that song is in reference to. And then just, you know, talking about that. And then it's like the intro telling you, you know, welcome back and just spitting knowledge. And then, you know, you just, then right at a certain point in time, you automatically go into, boom, everything hits. Everything falls apart, you know.
Wow.
And when everything falls apart, that's where, you know, you do like you're regrouping. You know, you're starting over. So and that's exactly what happens in the album. Like I get to a point in the middle where there's an interlude with me trying to figure out myself and find myself. There's more vulnerability, you know, on the album, thinking, you know, like all about finding your essence, your inner essence as a person.
That reminds me of a poem I wrote ages ago. I'm looking for myself but can't find myself because I'm hiding from myself. You know.
Yeah. It's
we have trouble finding ourselves. Sometimes we know everything it is to know about ourselves. But I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, the thing about the interlude is that it's like, it initially started as a song. I turned into an interlude and just made a different beat to it. We got a different beat from, you know, Speed on the Beat, where it came to a point where it was like, you know, knowledge of self flows when you find your inner essence. And when you find who you are, you know, there's peace of mind that you have for yourself, and there's just, you know who you are, you know what you're willing to do, capable of, you just know yourself, you know.
Exactly.
And
so the question is, when someone asks us, who are you, do we really know?
I think that's part of the journey of life, which is part of the album, is like, it's learning who you are, learning who I am, learning about myself. Every day is a new experience. So that's what, you know, that's what the album reflects in so many different ways. And like I said, it's a story. So it culminates with me kind of coming to peace with a new beginning of life and going from there. And that's the whole point. That's why I initially didn't want to do any sequel. I never had any intention to do a sequel at all. The next album was after DOA was going to be the Black Experience, which was going to be more live instrumentation with Steven, you know, Steven Joseph, who I've been working with since I first started putting out projects. You know, we were going to do all this live instrumentation and Speed was going to do beats, I was going to do beats, and it's just going to be like a throwback, but just kind of something new, something different from the average hip-hop, you know, like the average boom, boom bass with some, you know, some horns or some drums or soul samples. It was going to be live instrumentation. It was going to be something, you know, just in your like in your face, but just, you know, creative. But Soul Revival 2 came about because of the fact I felt like this is a rebirth period, and Soul Revival 1 came. Soul Revival 1 came out the same day I found out that you know, my ex was pregnant with Zori, like the same day, which was like the top of the world for me. And for me to be at the top of the world when the first one came out and then be at the bottom almost mentally in a lot of places, by the time the second one is starting, I was like, I have to do a second one to restart the process. And then I can go into
the
Black Experience.
Still in the works after Soul Revival 2 is released?
Black Experience is still, yeah, it's the next one. That's the next one.
Okay, cool. Remember, you told us a lot about that, but we're so glad that Soul Revival has appeared in our lives. But yeah, those lyrics and "Piece of Me," man, that's some deep stuff. And the part regarding about the getting the guy, and also I love it when you mention I am now a dad, but yet not a husband.
It's like now I'm a baby father instead of being a husband. We're both stubborn and petty. You know, I'm ready to find redemption. Like it's a reflection. Like for me to talk about. In the song, like, I'm talking about, you know, like, I wanted to be a father and a husband. You know, I think under the surface, regardless that it turns out to be every man's dream, regardless of, you know, whether we risk it all or whether we mess it up or whatever, you know, it's a situation where when you listen to the lyrics of the song, when I was writing it, I wrote it very quickly. I remember I sent the lyrics over to Speed on the Beat, you know, who, you know, that's Team DR. We've been working together for a couple years now. Uh-huh. And, you know, I sent the lyrics over to him when I first wrote it, and I had no beat. I had no beat for it at the time. There was no beat. I just had to get it off my chest because I was, you know, I was dealing with the situation where I had just got a situation with, you know, the mother of my child. And then I had the second verse, which was about this chick who I was, you know, like I liked, and I've known for so long, and I've known you offer, then it, like, we crossed the line. I say it in the song, you know, lines we cross them eventually, like, we crossed the line that I didn't think we should cross, and when we did, it's like, how do you go back from it? And
wow.
as cold and calculated as I can be to women at times, because I have my ways of being just nonchalant, like, I don't have time for this shit, you know, but with these situations, it's like, these are women that I actually felt something in some way. Obviously, the mother of my child, I felt more, so she gets the most important verse, and she gets the most of me. She gets a piece of my soul, as opposed to getting a piece of my mind or my imagination.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but let's say what's up to a couple callers, if you don't mind, and if they don't mind.
That's fine.
Okay. What's up? Caller. I have a couple online. You want to say what's up to us or give your review regarding Piece of Me or just ask a question?
It depends.
Okay,
do they know who they are? Which area code are some of these callers calling from?
Over H-Town. We got H-Town in the house, and I'm not sure about the other area code, but I know H-Town is in the house.
Oh, well, then that must be me. My bad.
Yeah, that's you.
Hey, what's up, H-Town? I love me some Texas. And congratulations, Dwight Howard is now you.
No, that's no, Dwight Howard is a female.
Yeah, we don't rock with no Dwight Howard over here. Nah.
It's true, God. You know who this is.
I know who it is. I know who it is.
I know who it is.
Uh-huh. See, this ain't Hills. This is different.
Yeah. But no, I finally got to listen to the track. It's very. I appreciate it so, because it's real.
Yeah, isn't it real?
Ain't no question to it. It's real. Hey, how does he feel about this? You ain't got to do all that, because you're not speaking in metaphors. You're saying A, B, C, ain't no other way about it. And I respect that.
Well, I appreciate
exactly.
that.
Even if I don't like you. Even though I don't like you.
look. All right, Chuck. We ain't doing
this.
This ain't Rutherford Hills. This ain't Hills.
But no, the track was fresh. I really liked it. I'm saying, even if you don't do physical copies, I'm going to be bootlegging it and passing it out to everybody.
Now, who is this?
Oh, my name Chuck,
we're going to call him Chuck. We're going to call him Chuck. This is @YouSickChuck on Twitter.
Okay.
This is my dude. This is my dude here. He calls into the wrestling radio show all the time.
Oh,
so
thank you so much for calling the Culture Shock Entertainment Report. So,
I had to for True God. That's the only.
Yes, he's on point. I love him. His music. Yeah, he's definitely real. I mean, nothing fake about his lyrics and then his music and just everything. And Piece of Me, can't get no realer than that.
Yep. And I listened to this whole interview. And I only call in the Hills. But I called in for this one. So, yeah, that's saying something.
Yes, it
well,
is.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you, Pep. You know, I appreciate you. I know I got to hit you up about your theme. We got to talk
about
that.
Don't worry about it. Focus on your interview, Pimp. All that other shit will get handled.
I got you.
If you have anything you want to promote, though, feel free.
The world will scream hero when they're ready.
Okay, that's cool. A friend of God's friend of mine. So thank you so much for tuning in.
You're welcome.
All right, who else we got? I know we got some more. We got any more callers? Any more?
Is he the H-Town? Because we have another area code, 347.
Yeah, he's H-Town.
Okay, I love me some H-Town. I have a lot of pimp friends in H-Town. Oh, 347. 347, what's up? Thank you so much for tuning in.
There's a 347?
Yeah. What area code is that? It's a familiar area code, but I cannot think of it. But I'm so glad you're
is New York. It's somebody from New York that's on. I'm not sure who, though.
Wow, cool. Okay, that's what I thought. And thank you, those that listen to my virtual media mentor, Ryan Seacrest. Also, I invited Ryan, as he's on vacation, to tune in if he could. So hopefully he had an opportunity to listen to a few minutes, if not the whole episode, because he's on vacation. But But I'm like, I'm sure I hear from him regarding this interview, or you will.
Ryan Seacrest. Is that Ryan Seacrest that you said?
Yeah, I love networking with Ryan Seacrest, and I had if you had noticed, I tweeted out to him to if he could while he's on vacay to please listen.
Wow.
Considering
everything I said, I don't think Ryan Seacrest is going to be too happy about some of the stuff I'd have said. Not that I care, regardless. But,
that's the thing, that Ryan loves the realness of true artists. And he's probably, if he did have an opportunity to listen, or when he listened to the recorded version of the show, he's going to be like, because I'm saying to myself as I'm talking to you, I'm hoping Ryan is listening, because that's what he loves about artists that are true to their game, you know, and you are definitely true to your game.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, that's what I...
The underground artist Pitbull is hosting America Top 40 this weekend while Ryan is on vacation, and I was amazed to find out, because I know he's been underground and indie forever, but the last album that he put out was his first major label album.
Is that Pitbull?
So he's a perfect symbol of a underground independent artist that is mainstream.
You said Pitbull? Is that who you said?
Yeah, he's hosting America Top 40, so he's
Pitbull hasn't been underground in years. I'm not gonna say he's sold out, because that'd be actually too nice. But he does pop music now, so I don't consider him an underground artist. He's done songs with Jennifer Lopez. I do not consider Pitbull an underground artist at all. I don't.
The collaborations. So what about Lil Wayne? Do you consider him underground? Because
no,
he does a lot of collaborations.
Not at all. Underground is different. If you have BET, MTV commercials, and you're not underground. That's not underground. Underground is when you working from the bottom up yourself. Like, I self promote mostly everything amongst my team. We build a brand on our own. We don't have backup. We don't have the industry pushing for us. We do it on our own.
Pitbull and Lil Wayne, they started out.
They started out under people. Pitbull started out under Lil Jon. Lil Wayne started out under Birdman and everybody. So that's what that is. You know, I don't look at that as underground. They all started out mainstream. Lil Wayne's
like Master P definitely was underground.
Yeah, Master P. Yeah,
Master P definitely an example of underground.
Yeah, I mean, Master P started out underground, and the thing is, he went mainstream, and then I guess he's back underground now, because I don't consider him mainstream now. But
yeah.
I mean, I don't look at anybody who you see on TV that's getting pushed. I don't look at them as underground, because you're not. If you have television support and industry support, you're not underground. Underground starts from the bottom when you're working yourself, when you have to set up your own interviews. Set up your own promos. You set up your own stuff, your own recording studio time, pay for your studio time out of pocket. Do this. That's underground.
Yeah.
You don't go to, like when Lil Wayne and Pitbull, they go to a label and they tell them, look, we're going to give you $500,000. This is your budget for the album, for your videos. I don't have that. Most underground artists don't have that. That's the more. That's the purest.
Exactly.
Essence of being an
artist. That's my response to your tweet earlier on Saturday, when you were talking about the underground artists, and that's when I said that I respect even the mainstream artists that do recall and do remember their underground roots, because there were a time where they had to struggle and they had that hunger to make that good music. You know, that's why it's amazing. Jay-Z, I see some people are just in awe of his new music. And I know you have your feelings toward the new music of a lot of the mainstream artists too, but that he still has that hunger sound in his music, to me, my opinion, from when he was an underground artist.
I don't hear hunger in Jay-Z's music.
Not hunger, like literally hungry for, you know, just struggling, but I hear the hunger in his lyrics to make good music.
I don't. You know, the reason why I don't is because I don't think Jay has much to rap about. That's not to say his music isn't good, and not by any stretch. I enjoy the new album, but I don't hear hunger. You know,
you don't think it's not as raw as it could be.
Not even that. It's just that like what does he have to rap about? When you have hunger, and you he listened to it. He got a song about his daughter. You know, but the truth to be told, he doesn't even mention the fact he has another child. out there that's like 12, 13 or something like that. Like, he doesn't mention
that.
The
little
that,
boy
so.
That allegedly they report about? Yeah.
That little boy, yeah.
That's allegedly.
The little boy that looks exactly like him. I don't know.
Yeah,
if
I have heard
like
about him throughout the years.
You know, it's a thing like the industry. I know how the industry works because on the album I have a song called No Money Down, and I'm talking about how the industry can easily buy your soul with no money down. And
because
you sign a contract automatically, you owe albums. You owe albums to him. You owe this and that. Like, the industry is built up that way. So when I look at a Jay-Z who might have a child out of wedlock or whatever, or a child, of course you don't want him to, you know, want him to know. Like, there's a reason why the girl who said it was his child shuts up. Hush money, you know.
Yeah, because I hear a lot about the alleged child. I say alleged because since he's not out with the child, talk about the child. But I've heard about the child. I've heard that he looked like him and all that. But wow, that is a good point. Yeah, I noticed. Like, seemed like when he and Beyonce married, then I stopped hearing all the stories about the alleged child that looked just like him.
And that's
so
the
that's
industry
a good point
for you.
You just make.
That's the industry, though. The industry can make they can make things go away because the industry feeds off. But the industry feeds off of picking on celebrities or picking at celebrities. But they also thrive off of hiding stories that they don't want the public to know about as well. It's a double edged sword. It works kind of both ways, where you could talk about Jeezy's other child, or you could talk about somebody else's hidden secrets, or who's gay in Hollywood, or stuff like that. That's what they thrive off of in Hollywood. And the thing is, we spend so much time, I guess the regular fans spend so much time worrying about this stuff that we ourselves don't get to allow ourselves to get to that level where they're at. I feel like that's what the paparazzi in Hollywood and TMZ, I kind of feel like that's their purpose, is to keep you so influenced into the lives of people you never met or you don't know, who have no relevance to your life, that we spend, and it's all go back to the sheep mentality. We spend so much time saying, oh, hey, Jay-Z did this. Or Jay-Z, like, when somebody tells me, like, yo, Jay did this deal with Samsung to, put out the album or sell a million copies before the album even drops. My first initial reaction was, damn, that's dope. That's dope right there. That's fresh.
Exactly, because like, a lot of times I talk about people, I'm talking about their work. And, like, I was talking about Dwight Howard the other day in one of the Blog Talk Radio friends come in the chat room about his personal life, about him having a white wife or girlfriend. And I'm like, I don't know nothing about his personal life. I just, I'm a big supporter of his work, because some of us are into certain people, I guess, personal lives. But my thing is a person's work. And so, the paparazzi, and my show is an entertainment lifestyle show. We have our purposes, and you're right. I guess I'm sounding like T.I. now. I'm flabbergasted when he said that on Beef. But I'm just like, that goes into a whole nother discussion, and we're almost close to the end of the show. But that's a good point. Paparazzi versus true real stories. People that live their some people do live their lives out in public.
But I live it out.
Well, I have this child. I'm not denying my children. I have this ex and this ex and this woman. But some people are like, oh, please don't let that get out. I don't want this information about myself to get out. And in the midst of rumors, because there's enough rumors out there, regarding non-celebs and celebs that we have to deal with. I'm sure you hear rumors, hear stuff about you never knew. I know I do. Like, okay, what?
Yeah, I mean, I hear rumors all the time, but like, my initial point was when people were like, Jay-Z did the Samsung deal for his album, I was like, oh, that's dope. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
But in my mind, I'm always thinking, I'm like, all right, well, what can I do for Soul Revival 2? To make that album just as big, instead of just putting it out through iTunes and Amazon and just having it come out. Like, if Jay-Z ups the game a little bit for artists, I want to do the same thing for underground artists.
Exactly.
Like, when I was coming out when I was coming out with the first Soul Revival, there wasn't a lot. There were artists doing iTunes, but they weren't doing it the same way. I did a documentary on the making of my album talking about my literary influences.
You read my mind. I was just about to mention that.
You know, and that was, and that's the thing.
That was very unique and very original.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I'm telling people about my literary influences, like what books I'm reading while I'm going through the process of the album, showing you studio stuff, telling everybody who's a part of the album, having them sit down and talk about what it means to them, including the mother of my child, who, you know, we were together about telling about how much she means to me, how much she meant to the album, talking about what albums I was listening to while I'm making my album. Like, I didn't want to be just like, yo, check my music out, such and such, here's the link. It was like, no.
Yeah.
And you know, for me to do like a total, I think, of like almost 10,000 views on those videos on YouTube, you know, let me know that was my highest rated videos on YouTube, but let me know I was doing the right thing by putting out a documentary. It was a 3-part, and that was that, and that was a different presentation. And on this one here now, for Soul Revival 2, I'm working on different ways to present it. Like, I'm possibly looking to do an app for the album itself. You know, like an app for everybody's phone where you can get it, where it's easily accessible. You know, I'm trying to get, you know, like also do a possible, like a graphic novel for the album, which is entirely not what the average hip-hop person wants to do, but this is a story. And I've been talking with some people, some affiliates of mine who do graphic novels, and I was thinking, you know, what better way to present an album than have a graphic novel come out with it at the same time? You know, you got an album, and you got an app to go with it, and you have a graphic novel to go with it that tells a story. Like, you know, like it's almost like a comic book, but I call it a graphic novel because it's telling the story of a redemption, just over exaggerated a little bit. You know, instead of me talking about me and my ex going through this, or the mother of my child, or my child being born, it's just me fighting my personal demons, but in a graphic novel form. You know, facing these different things. So I wanted to do something that represents the album, and that's what we're working on now, is just that everything I do, I don't want to be just the average artist, because everybody else who I come across, like, I'll tell this quick story about somebody who I was actually trying to, like, I don't feature artists on my albums, hardly at all. If you're on my album, it's because of the fact you're usually a part of my team. And
now, I love that, Stephen Joseph. And who is that you're featuring on Piece of Me?
There's nobody on Piece of Me. There's just the sample of Sade.
I was like, I know that sound familiar to me. Now, that was a sample from Sade's song.
It was a song called Jezebel that she had on her album.
I know that sound familiar to me, but I'm like, well, I didn't know if it was. I'm so into your lyric, you, and I hear the female vocals, and I'm like, well, who is that? And I love me some Sade.
Yeah. And I mean, I sample Sade. We sample Sade. And shout out to Speed on the Beat and Stephen Joseph. You know, Speed on the Beat, Stephen Joseph, and myself.
Stephen Joseph. Oh, my God. That guy, I know he's talented.
We worked on that.
I play Everything Changes all the time. Plus other songs, Everything Changes. That song is so motivating.
Yeah, we worked on Piece of Me all together. It's like Speed on the Beat initially came up with the concept and then a sample, and the drums on the hook was him, and then myself and Steve, we were in the studio and we changed up the verses, the drums on the verses a little bit to, you know, fit where I wanted to go with the song. So it's like a collaborative effort through everybody who does that. And I don't usually, you know, I don't have other artists on my album because, my story is my story. So, you know, it's very rare that I will put on, you know, like other artists or other rappers unless I really believe in their vision. Like if Speed wants to get on the album, I'll put him on the album because that's like my brother. So, you know, like that's family and I could put you on there. But I haven't put him on the album yet because I don't have a place for him to be on the album yet, which is perfectly fine. Like if there's a place for me on his album or if there's not, a place for me on his album, it's perfectly fine because we still work together and we help each other out with our projects. But I had an idea to do a posse cut, which when hip hop, they don't have posse cuts like that anymore. They don't have a whole lot of, you know, like 3 or 4 people on the song together and it actually be a hip hop song. You know, it's just more like you got a hook and the whole concept. I had a concept of a song and I started reaching out to people and this guy, he was like, look, you know, he premiered a piece of me on his show too, earlier in the week, and I told him,
you don't you don't hear songs like from groups like Wu-Tang Clan anymore. There aren't even you don't hear songs like that anymore. Features are from groups.
You know, and that's what I wanted to do. I was like, let's create some real hip hop. You know, where everybody's just going in and spitting, having some fun. I got an idea for a song. And the only reason why I started to think about the song is because the fact this guy hit me up and he's like, look, you know, I'm going to premiere your song, Piece of Me, on my radio show this week. He did, I think it was on Wednesday. And he's like, hey, how about, can I get a verse on your album? I said, I usually don't do it. And my album is mostly, like, fully, you know, completed, written out. You know, we're just putting pieces together to finish recording and getting it mastered. It's almost done. And I told him, I was like, yeah, we could definitely say, look, dude, we can do that. That's cool, bro. You know, like, we can figure something out. You know, let's do that. And it was a situation where, you know, I said, okay, well, you make the beat and you put a verse on it. You send it to me. I'm going to send it over to these two other dudes who want to get on it. And I didn't, because he told me he made his own beats. And he's like, yeah, we can work. I make beats. I got this and that. And I was like, all right, let's work. And, you know, I'll put you on my album. I don't put other rappers on my album at all, but, you know, you help me out, I'll put you on my album. And he was like, okay, well, I can't do that because I don't make beats. And I'm like, you told me you made beats a long time ago when I first talked to you. And he's like, well, I can, you know, if I would have to buy a beat, and I don't know if I want to do that. And I'm looking at it like, okay. And then he was like, well, is your album fully recorded? And I said, it's written. It's done. It's finished, basically. It's written. And he said, but is it recorded? I said, it doesn't matter, bro. Like, you know, like, it's done. If I add a song to it, I'm adding a song to my album so you can get on and other people who want to work with me can get on it. I'm like, but the rest of my album is done. He said, why don't you take one of your verses off and, you know, like, let me put a 16 on it. And I said, no, that's just not happening. It's not happening, bro. And that pissed me off to a point. Like, I'm cool with the dude, but I'm like, that pisses me off. Like, my vision for my album, it's my vision. You ain't going to tell me to, like, just change it. Just be flexible with your album. This is my fucking album. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I told him, like, that's
your vision.
You know, and I told him that. And I get angry, but I'm like, this is my fucking album. Like, nobody's making my album or executive producing my album but me. Soul Revival 1 and DOA had Speed and Steve and Joseph executive producers. This album is not like that. This album is all me. You know, Speed is he's doing all the beats. He's the producer on that, and he's doing most of the beats. There's one other guy named Slash who's from D.C. who did a beat and contributed a beat. Like, and these are people I work with who, you know, are like family to me. So, like, but this album is entirely my vision. This is entirely my vision. You know, like, this is, you know, and somebody who ain't family.
The vision unfolds properly.
Yeah, and somebody who ain't family or ain't a part of my team is not going to tell me to be flexible with my album because it's my album. I don't give a fuck what you do with your shit. Don't touch mine. And that pissed me off. That really pissed me off, you know, because, like, I put a lot of time and effort into making my music and making my albums be as classic as great as they are. And I feel like I've done a damn good job with the albums I put out. So you ain't going to, I'm all about cohesiveness. The same, like, I listen with the ears of a fan as well as an artist. So if I listen to my music, I'm thinking I want my stuff to be cohesive because I'm an artist who believes in making good albums. And I believe in that if this is my vision. If I say, if I'm going to come out of my comfort zone and say, look, I'm going to put you on my album, you need to come correct with your shit. You ain't going to tell me to change around songs that I've been writing and working on.
They came to work with you.
I mean, that's just. You know, that's just an issue that I had, and that actually happened just recently, like today, and it bothered me to the point where I was gonna go on, you know, like a little Twitter rant like usual, and call this dude out, but I was like, nah, we're not gonna do that. Like, I'll just handle it privately because, you know, we're businessmen, but you don't do that. I put this out here now because, you know, I won't call any names, but, like, if he's listened to this, I'm pretty sure he is. Like, he understands who it is. Like, that annoyed me because this is my album. Like, I don't care what you know about this industry or if you have connections. I don't care what you do. You don't control what I do. I control what I do. This is why I am, like, the leader of Team DAR is because, in fact, for my music and my goals and my ideals, this is what I do. I put it together. You don't have any input. So him to say he's flexible with your album, like, it would present a problem. Like, I don't care who you are in New York or New Jersey or wherever you from. I don't care who you are. I don't care how street connected you are. Ain't no nigga going to tell me what to do with my shit. Never. Never happened. Ain't never happened in my life.
Right.
It never happened, period. So with somebody telling me what to do with my album, the best the best album I've ever put out, the like, you know, my favorite, like the favorite body of work that I've worked on. No, you know, like no, that's not gonna happen. And that's, I put that out there so other artists who want to work with me know, like, I'm not making any changes for you, because you ain't making, you ain't gonna make no changes for me. And even if you did, I wouldn't make changes for you on my shit, because my shit is my shit.
There are a lot of artists who would love to work with you in the near future, or executives, or producers, writers. They love hearing how you go about your work ethic. You know, people have different types of work ethics, and you're by being firm on and. Firm on what you know is right.
But that's the thing. I don't.
That's attracting a lot of artists to say, "Hey, well, I'm going to contact him when I have my. If they don't already have their stuff together, I'm going, as soon as I get my stuff straight, I'm contacting him. Because I like
he's
talking the way he works, the way he does business.
That's something that I've tried to tell people for a while now. Is just that, look, like, if you want to work with me. It's like before I would do, you know, like if you, like I said, if you're family and we work together and I consider you to be family or you're like really cool with me, like I won't charge you anything to work with me. But you know, if it's a business thing, like I want your track on you, you know, you hit my PayPal up or, you know, whatever, like, you know, we could work something out. Like I'm still a business artist at the end of the day, and I can't keep doing the shit that people want me to do from the beginning. Like, there's people who held me down in the beginning who I'm like, yo, I will always have you forever. Like, for somebody like me and Speed, like Speed on a beat, like, with Speed, like, I hold Speed down because of the fact he helped me, you know, grow the Team DAR movement. And for him, I look at it like, you know, like, I gave him the opportunity, you know, to be put out in front of people who might not have been checking for him initially either. Like, we helped each other out. That's what a team does. You know, like help give him more exposure, help put him in the forefront, give him his first, you know, paid tracks that I was the first person to do that for him. So, and then, you know, I put him out there as executive producer on my album. You know, like, that's not, you know, nobody was doing that at the time for people that was in their team. I was like, you know what, like, I want you to be, you know, like, looked at in a different light. So I'm going to make you the main producer of my team. You know, like, I want to look out for you. And that's
and
where
that definitely looks. You know, that's good for his resume. I mean, some people might say, well, I don't care about my resume, but that does look good on his resume.
And that's something, and that's something that, you know, that's something for him, like, just for us, period, as a team, like, for me to look at and like, yo, Speed on the Beat blows up, you know, as a producer, you know, I feel some responsibility for that. The same way, with, you know, when True God goes and he's dropping these albums that people love, Speed on the Beat is responsible for that because he's the man behind the boards. He's the one that's working on the beats. He's putting that in there. Like, that's a team. It's a collaborative effort. It's not about money for me, you know. Like if I say, yo, Speed, such and such, like, if Speed needs something from me, you know, I got him. If I need something from him, if he got it, you know, he got me. Like, it's deeper than music. But for everybody else who I'm coming in contact with who wants to do work and get work together, that's not anything else outside of music. That's all that is. For people who want to do business, it's just music. If it's just business, let it just be business, you know. And people start to get, you know, people start to get too familiar because I'm a very, like, approachable person in every aspect. So if we're talking business and I'm just cool with you and they're like, hey, bro, what's going on? Hey, what's up, dude? What's going on? You good? Everything good? Your life good? They automatically feel like, oh, they got a rapport built up with me where they can say stuff that would initially, if we were face-to-face, I'd probably punch them in the face because I would feel offended. Like, I would feel offended if somebody told me, yo, just be flexible with your album. If you told me that in the studio to my face, I would punch you in your fucking mouth. Like, that's the ultimate disrespect. Tell me what to do with my own art, because I wouldn't tell anybody else what to do with their own art. Unless you ask me my opinion. If you ask me my opinion, I'll give you my opinion. But if I don't ask you for your opinion, you can shut up. Don't give it to me. Like, and that's just on my music. Feedback is different. If I ask you, like, what do you think about this? And you're like, yo, man, I don't I don't like it like this. I think you just differently. Okay, I'm gonna take into consideration your opinion. But if I tell you, hey, do you think I should expand my album to have some guest appearances? If you say yeah, okay, I'll take it into consideration. You don't tell me you'll be flexible with your album. That's an issue. That's something that bothered me. And I had couple people come to me like that before, and mention that before. Like, yo, you should let me do this. Or yo, you should do verses for free. Like, I'm not doing that anymore. if you fam, you know, and I consider you to be cool, you can get a verse for free. But now it's business, you know. Fuck you, pay me. That's what that's how we rolling now. Like, because I have a child, you know, I have a child to raise. I have bills to pay. I have things to do. I can't keep doing the same thing. This is, you know, like we're trademarked. We got the new brand, which I didn't even have time to take the time to mention, that we have a new brand, Wrestling Heels. There's no more Wrestling Heads. You know, I'm not a part of Wrestling Heads anymore. I'm Wrestling Heels. And I'm one of the co-founders of Wrestling Heels, you know, the VP pretty much of, you know, with the owner, president, whatever you want to call him, man, Canabruski. Like, that's something a vision we talked about together and started up together. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, he has way more money than me. So he's probably more so the finance behind that than I am. But I do my part, you know, I do my part as far as everything else. And that's a brand. That's a brand. The True God Immortal is trademarked. That's a brand. These are brands. It's business. This is different now, you know. Like, I can't keep doing the whole thing about, hey, man, you know, like, I got guys who come up to me and I'll say, yo, man, like, let me get a verse. And I'm waiting for them to respond with, hey, I'll shoot you over a couple hundred for this verse. Or what's your rates for this verse? They're just let me get a verse. Like, I heard people say, you think you're better than everybody else. And I'm like, you might be right. Maybe I do. Like, I don't. Maybe that's how I perceive. I just have a confidence in my ability to know that I'm worth more than just keep giving out free verses all the time.
Exactly.
Unless you're on my team, you know.
Exactly.
But people don't understand that. People want you to be at the level that they want to keep themselves at. Like, you see me. I don't put out free music all the time.
People should recognize the value of one's work, even when you do promo stuff or freebies for work with certain ones. I mean, people should realize that there's value to an individual's work, especially when it's good work.
Like, imagine
I appreciate it when people see value in my work. You know, it's very appreciative. Like, cool.
Yeah,
I love it when people say, "Let's do business." You know, because we all got to eat. We all have bills. We all have a life to live.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's a situation where, like, the average artist today is putting out mixtapes left and right, or saying, "Oh, I just finished a new mixtape. I'm gonna put it out for y'all," or "I just finished this EP and I'm gonna put it out for free for y'all," or "Hey, I'm paying money to do shows." Like, because I set up a ton of shows that I was gonna do, and I canceled them all because I felt offended by the promoter who was like, "Okay, give me $100, you know, for each show." And I was like, "Why am I paying you to do a show that I'm gonna have people come out to see me perform, and I'm traveling to?" Like, and he was like, "You have to pay for your travel, but you can get an opportunity to perform in front of like 500 people." I'm like, "Dude, I sold more records than that on my last album. What the fuck are you talking?" Like I felt offended. I said, "Like, I'm not paying you to do any shows. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, we're moving thousands, you know, a couple thousand units per album just off of the promotion of ourselves." You know what I mean? Like, that's not, like, we don't need any promoter. I was like, I'm not doing that. So a lot of people ask me, like, why haven't you performed, you know, done any shows recently or anything like that? And I'm like, because of the fact these promoters are trash. They want me to pay them for something.
That's what I had been wanting to know. I figured you would provide us that information when, you know, if you had it. So, okay. Okay. But keep us updated whenever there are any show dates scheduled.
That's the thing. I'm so selective with the stuff I do because of the fact I'm meeting all these different promoters who are like, "Yeah, man, we can get you out to New York or fly you out to North Carolina." I had a promoter even say, he's like, "We got J. Cole coming out in North Carolina. You want to open for him?" And I was like, "Yeah, we can work that out. That's cool." And then he's like, "Oh, well, you know, you got to give me $150 up front to cover some tickets just in case." I'm like, "It's J. Cole. I'm opening for him. Why the fuck would I pay you money to open up for somebody who is a sold out crowd of gonna be like 3,000 people? Why would I pay you for that?" And he's like, "Well, that's an opportunity." I said, "Those people are coming there to see J. Cole. Like it's a job for me to go out there. It's a job for me to go out there and make them remember True God more than they remember J. Cole. So why would I pay for that? I don't pay for that. That's an opportunity. It's like, you want me to perform, you think I can bring some people out. Let me do that."
Exactly.
You know, like, Like I deal with promoters on a daily basis, and some people are like, well, you don't get the game. I was like, I don't have to get the game. I one point he was like, you don't give enough to get enough. I was like, I can only give you so much. I'm not giving you everything. Like, you're not getting everything from me. Like, I work my ass off, and I believe I deserve, you know, some fairness in return. The industry will fuck you over. That's what the industry is designed to do, is fuck you over. That's what they designed you to do. So if somebody automatically tells me, hey, look, you know, we want you to do this show. You give me 200 or 150 or whatever up front, and you can perform for like 1,500 people, and Kendrick Lamar might be here, or such and such going to be here performing. And I'm thinking, and they're like, you get a chance to meet them. And it's like they're dangling this idea of me meeting Kendrick Lamar or J. Cole as incentive to me to pay $200 to be on the show. And I'm looking at it like, dude, I've met Jay-Z before. Sat down, had a conversation with Jay-Z before. I met Nas, 50 Cent. I've met like Slim Thug. I met him before. Like, I've met these people. That matters not at all. That does not matter to me to meet rappers who are famous, because I don't know them. They have no value to me unless we're going to do business. And I'm not gonna I'm not paying $200 to go meet J. Cole and do business with him when I can, like, if we happen to do business with each other, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm perfectly fine with that. And I think that's the issue that promoters don't understand. They're like, well, you should be happy to have this opportunity. It's like, no, I'm not happy to have this opportunity. I see slights everywhere. So I'm always looking for more. And the game wants you, the industry and the game wants you to accept scraps, crumbs, you know, and take that. And there's no way in hell I'm paying money to basically hold somebody else's jock, because that's basically what it is. And like,
wow,
I'm
you sound
own,
like the NBA Association, like last season when they were striking, a couple seasons back, when they were like, we're not getting all that chicken scratch and stuff. We need our money.
You know, but I mean, and that's the thing. It's just a situation where you give what you give and put out. If you put out to the world that you want to be a rapper who does free mixtapes all the time, or you want to be a rapper who.
They're lost if they didn't go ahead and book you to open for J. Cole, because, you know, it's a win. It's not like it would have been a win-win situation, you know.
And it happens. Like, the game is funny because people say, oh, you got thousands of Twitter followers. Like, this will help increase your audience. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that's not where I want to be. Like, and some people are like, what are you tripping? I would have jumped at the opportunity. I say, and that's exactly what they want. They want to control you, so they know they can dangle certain carrots in front of you, and you will go after that. You know, like if you tell me, hey, Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake, 70,000 people are performing, would you like to open for them at the M&T Bank Stadium? That's something that'll pique my interest, because that's 70,000 people. You know, that's something where I say, okay, $150, I'm going to be around people that's worth $500 million, and then 70,000 people opening up, that provides you with the window. Me opening for 1,500 people when I have 4,000 Twitter followers, that's nothing. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't do anything for me. That's nothing. Like, I'm confident in my ability that I need something that can take me to the next level. And just confident that, like, I don't want to do everything the same thing everybody's doing. Everybody's paying for promo. Everybody's paying for this, paying for that. I don't want to do that. And people look at me and say, well, what's wrong with you? This is the way the game is. I know the way the game is. How do I exist in it?
That's why you
want
to do things and desire to do things and plan to do things and are doing things differently, right?
That's the point. Why, you know, you like I don't want to fit in. I want to stand out. If I fit into your game, it's like if you fit into our plan and work hard at it for however long and put out 6 or 7 free mixtapes, maybe you might make it to a certain level. Maybe you might. I don't want to take my chances that way. I'd rather do things differently, be innovative and creative in this game, and be a trendsetter, which I've always been, and move it forward. It's no different than what we do with the wrestling, the new radio show with Wrestling Heels. You know, it's no different because we're innovators, we're trendsetters. We get people all the time, though, who, you know, like, bite off our concepts, bite off our hashtags, stuff that we've been trademarked by the brand. But we're trendsetters, we're innovators. The things that nobody else that were watching us wanted to do, they didn't envision doing this, we're doing these different things. You know, our website is up. It's different. We're talking about
And what is
things.
The website?
Like,
provide us of all
is,
the... information that we need?
It is wrestlingheels.com, or you can go to blogtalkradio.com/wrestlingheelsradio. I basically do most of the hosting duties there. Sometimes Ken Brusky might open the show, but I usually do most of the hosting duties and lead like most of the interviews. And it's different because I used to do Wrestling Heads, and when I was doing Wrestling Heads, we were stuck in a spot.
Okay, does Wrestling Heads still exist, or it's obsolete now?
They probably still exist. I'm just not a part of it no more, so I can't really tell you. I mean, I'm pretty sure it still exists technically, but
okay.
It's different, well, you know.
Okay, Wrestling Heels. Okay, everyone, Wrestling Heels.
And I'll give everybody a quick backstory of how the change came about, because I've talked about so much other personal stuff. I'll give you a quick story. The thing with Wrestling Heads is that Wrestling Heads was a brand that I had a lot to do with growing. You know, I put the brand of Wrestling Heads on my back for a while, leading interviews and, you know, trying to promote the show. And my rants on the show were what people called epic, because I was just going off and talking about so many different things. You know, like, I was just doing my best and trying my hardest to grow the brand. And eventually got to a point where I didn't have any power or any say-so. Nobody came to me ahead of time. They were doing really sneaky stuff. I had ideas. I was like, man, we can do this. And it's like, well, you're not a co-founder. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'm doing more than both the co-founders put together to grow this brand. Like, y'all need to stop playing with me. Like, I don't follow behind anybody. So this is an issue. And then, you know, me and Brewski kind of talking about it, like, this ain't working. One or two people want to be in charge, and one of the people want to be in charge ain't even on the show. He's barely, they don't even call in. You know, like, we're doing all this work. We're coming with all these concepts. Let's take it and flip it and put it into our own where we can be in control. And that's where Wrestling Heels started from. It started from just trying to do more than what the usual was. And in the last 3 months since it started, we've interviewed legendary wrestlers, you know, that I've had the pleasure of going through, you know, process of getting them. And Brewski's done a couple here and there. It's like we put our whole, you know, energy into this. We sponsor wrestling promotions. We're getting into booking matches for wrestling. We're getting into all these different things that for me is like a dream to be a part of something where I'm like, I have control over it. Like, I'm leading, you know, one of the leading people in this brand. You know, it's something that I could have done with Wrestling Heads, but they didn't want to do that. And so because I didn't have time to be, like, I can't follow behind people. You know, I can't follow somebody's lead. You got to, like, I kind of, you know, I move to the march of my own beat, you know. So you got, and with Wrestling Heels, I do whatever I want, you know. And we all do whatever you want, but we're still doing the concept of where it's professional. We're still working and grow the brand. So it's been amazing.
Is there
3 months.
A set time? Is there a set time? Or we should definitely follow Wrestling Heels, and you'll always be informed and notified regarding when the show is scheduled. But is there a scheduled time?
There is. We do Monday at 11:30 p.m. Every Monday, 11:30 p.m. after WWE Raw, we do shows. We usually, you know, do guests. I'll be on location live at WWE Monday Night Raw. Actually, I'm going this Monday. So I'll be there live at the event doing correspondence and stuff
cool. I would definitely tune in. We're going to tune in on Monday night at 11:30 Eastern time, and it'll be 10:30 my
time. Yeah, it's 11:30.
Okay, and 10:30 Central Standard Time. Okay, I'm definitely going to tune in on Monday night.
Yeah, it's just fun, you know. I've gone to different events so far this summer, and I've taken part in some fun stuff. It's just different, you know. It's just a different, it's really just a different atmosphere working with a team. So, you know, we got a great
work and team effort. I mean, it's a whole nother experience.
Yeah, and we also have a second show on Thursday. The time changes. It's usually 10:30. Sometimes it could be 11. Sometimes 11:30. You know. But yeah, you know, it's fun. It's fun. There's a lot of synergy amongst the team and what we do. So I enjoy it. I enjoy being a part of you know, a team and a brand that can actually be benefited by making money, which is what the goal is.
Exactly. And that's what I stress to listeners. I was like, I do not know anyone here at Blog Talk Radio that just, you know, that host and produce a show just as a hobby. People are here for a reason, to promote others, to for their business purposes, building their brand. I don't know anyone that just, oh, this is my hobby. Each and every show here on Blog Talk Radio serves a purpose.
Yeah, and that was the thing. That's where I kind of wrestling heads. I got annoyed because nobody was trying to make any business. Like, hey, let's get some merchandise.
Yeah.
Let's set it up. They didn't want to do it. Hey, let's do this. Like, you know, let's get some of our listeners to see if they can make, you know, any donations or anything like that. I was really just trying to find a way to grow the brand and make money for everybody so that we can do different things. You know, we can save up money and, you know, we can have, you know, hey, let's go to these events or let's do live correspondence here. And they didn't want to do it that way. And so now I have a brand, which I'm, you know, very, very big part of where we're doing that. And it's fun. You know, it's fun.
Exactly.
It is a hobby.
It's good to have fun, to love what you're doing.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
And it's, everything I do is something I love doing. You know, if I do music,
uh-huh.
I love doing it. I'm still working on books that I just had issues with laptops. I've had so many issues with laptops over the last year that I haven't been able to finish at all any books because I'll lose a laptop and one of them gets messed up. A lot of crazy stuff has happened, so I haven't been able to get, you know, my laptops to write my books, but I have screenplays and books that I've still been working on. I keep starting over on new laptops. Hopefully, next laptop I own, I'll be able to, you know, finish it and put it out. There's so many things I want to put my hands in. Anything that's creative and artistic, I like to have my hands in. You know, getting into graphic novels and comics is something that we're working on now, setting up, just getting the right artist who can, you know, put together the art, you know, the imagery for it. I actually started auditioning for acting jobs for, like, you know, different web series and indie movies, which is, I'm so not into the whole acting scene because I don't like reciting something that's already pre-written for me.
I'm going to share this with you. I'm in talks regarding a reality show idea of mine, which you might be interested in being a part of, so I'll keep you updated regarding that.
That's cool, you know.
I know some people say reality shows aren't real either, but reality shows, I think that might be something you might would be interested in being a part of when I tell you the concept of it.
It's funny because somebody told me, it's like, man, if you had your own reality show, I would watch it. And I was
exactly.
Like, and people were serious with me, like, because of this idea, like, look, you need your own show. Like, I would totally watch it because you're just like, you know, like you're entertaining and, you know, all those different things. And that's the thing. I kind of realized that, that's something to look into. So I figured I'd take my personality and actually put it through on the screen so people can see it and feel it. But it's, I don't know, you know, I my life is a movie. Stuff. Like, I feel like that. Like everybody who knows me can say the same thing. Like, dude, your life is a movie. You know, like the stuff that I go through and stuff that I see. Like, and I'm so open and honest about everything that people are like, dude, like your life is a movie. Like, if I have bad experiences with women or crazy experiences with women, they're like, dude, this can't be possible. Like what dude goes through this much? Like, I go through a lot
of
crazy stuff.
And women can relate to you, to your story, and feel you. And, you know, and then you have a persona to me as being a tough guy. But then talking with you, and I'm assuming those that spend time with you, it sounds like you're lovable, too.
well, that's the thing. I'm just, I don't know about lovable. That's a funny. that's funny. But, I mean, that's the thing. I think women, I'm not going to lie. I've been known now, I think. Like, a lot of the guys who know me, especially through social network, I get a lot of DMs from dudes, like, man, how do you get all these, like, pretty women and fine chicks to, like, respond to you and talk to you or like, they always talking to you? Or I get DMs from some of these same females, you know, and I get and I go out and I'm getting, you know, approached by women. And I don't really know how to describe it. I think it's just your natural aura and your energy that comes along, you know. So women naturally, like, the mother of my child told me one time when we were broke up, she's like, I know for a fact that you have natural charm that the average dude probably doesn't have or doesn't know how to use. And I didn't know what she was talking about. I still sometimes don't know what she's talking about. Like, she's like, you have a natural charm. She's like, that's one of the reasons why I was with you for so long. You just naturally have that charm. And I don't really see it like that. I might tell somebody I'll see it, but I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know. What women
see. Really hard. And then they, you know, then it comes, you know, that they work really hard at it.
You know, I don't know, you know, what everybody else sees. You know, so I don't know what women see. You
because
know.
You're just being you, huh? You're just being naturally you. And that's why at the beginning of the show you advised us, that all of us, that we should practice that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, myself in trying to, like, put forth ideas of how people can just, you know, kind of, I won't say gain their own confidence and be themselves. It's just like, you know, it usually starts with just being you. And so what everybody perceives as me being, you know, like, oh, you can get women, or you got rapport with women, and like, I make women blush on a daily basis. At least that's what I'm told by like these women themselves. Like, oh, I'm blushing, or you shouldn't say this. And to me, I'm just being honest. You know, I don't have a game. You know, like, I don't have any game. Like, if I say something to a female, I'm just being honest. Somebody hit me up and I had a conversation.
Like some guys and women too say my game is tight. You're not like saying, well, my game is tight. I know I got game. You're just you.
Yeah, like, I don't get it. Like, when people like I understand that relationships can be seen as a game, and I kind of understand that correlation of where it comes from. But for me, like, if I was having a conversation on Twitter with some girl, and we were just talking, and somebody hit me up, like, DM me, and was like, yo, how do you do that? And I'm like, what do you mean? I mean, like, I just saw you talking to this chick, and you were, you know, going into this and that, and I was like, what are you talking about? You know, like, and he's like, yeah, she just called her, like, you said she was cute or beautiful, something like that. And she was just like, oh, I'm giggling, I'm blushing. And I was like, what? I just said one thing. Like, I saw the girl. She's a pretty girl. Like, I can acknowledge and compliment a woman.
Some guys can just lay it on thick and not get anywhere. All you have to say is one word.
But I don't even look at it like it's a gift to gab. It's like, people look at it, I was like, I just, like, you just be honest, man. Like, I don't blow smoke up a woman's ass. First of all, like, if I give you one or two compliments, you're going to have to be cool with that, because I'm not going to sit there all day like, damn, girl, you this and that. You'll never hear me say that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because that's not my style. Like, and I think it worked for me like that. Like, even with my, like, the mother of my child, like, when we were together, like, I give her compliments on a daily, but it's like one or two a day, and I make sure the compliments count. Whereas some guys will just tell a woman all day long, look, baby, you this and that, you this and that, girl, you this and that, and it's forced. It's not real. You're not saying anything that's honest, you know? Like, you're just saying things like, oh, that's what she wants to hear. I don't really care what a woman, I don't care what a woman wants to hear.
Important. The quality, not the quantity.
Yeah, it is. Like, I don't care. Like, I said this before, you know, I don't care what a woman wants to hear. I don't care what she wants to hear. I'm just going to say what I feel. If it turns out that she enjoys it, she likes it, fine. If it turns out that she doesn't, so be it as well. And I've had that. I've learned the hard way that not every woman is going to respond well. Like, I've talked to over 360-some women since December. And I had one girl who I actually was feeling a little bit, and I just eventually realized, like, it's not going to work. And it's not. And, you know, I was like, this ain't going to work. Like, we would see each other, and we'd be hanging around, but she had a different type of friends, and I was like, this is not going to work, you know. And I really liked her, you know. Like, she was, like, I have a thing for exotic women sometimes. It's one of my vices. And she was exotic. She mixed, like, all these different things. And we would talk, and she said, I'm a free-minded thinker. And, you know, but she would go on about women's rights, and we would have conversations. And then I realized, I was like, we don't connect here that much. She has a weird way of thinking. And then, you know, for me, because it's physically attracted to her as I was, your mental still has to be on point, too, for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And her mental to me was not where it needed to be, and it got to a point where she expected me to be like, oh, are you going to do this for me, or are you going to do that? And I'm like, no, I'm not that person. I'm not that guy. You know, I've run into a lot of women like that. Like, are you going to take me out all the time, or are you going to do that? I'm like, nah, I don't do that. I don't take women out and pay for everything. I have a child. I have bills to pay. The same way a woman has, you know, bills to pay, or, and some of them don't. I know women who live with their parents who want me to take them out and wine them and dine them. And I'm looking at it like, I'm living out here with my child. I'm paying, trying to pay some bills, and I got money to spend. I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy, you know, and I have to be honest about that too, because women get false pretenses that you're going to get with a guy, he's going to take care of you, he's going to do this and that, and I'm not that guy. I let that be known ahead of time. I'm not that guy. I'm not going to take care of you the same way I got to go out and get mine. You got to go out and get yours.
And women respect that honesty too, because there are some guys that will let you assume, hey, I am that guy, and then you find out, oh, he's not that guy. So women respect that your honesty also.
Yeah, and a lot of women, I hate it all the time. Like, they're like, oh, it's just very sexy of you to be so honest. And I'm just like, a lot of stuff that people tell me is so great. I'm like, what are you talking about? Everybody's like this, ain't they? Like, is everybody not honest? Is everybody not being upfront about certain things or just being real about stuff? Like, this is not going on in the world today because everybody's saying they're so real. So somebody's lying. You know, somebody's lying. You know, and it's that, and that's just something I noticed, from just my dealings in the single life, is that women will be like, oh, you're so real about stuff. Sometimes I don't know if I can handle that, or someone like, you're too real for me. I don't know, and I'm like, that's a problem if I'm too real for you. Like, that means you expect me to live up to some kind of like false image of what a guy should do. And I don't think I should do that either, you know. It's just weird. I think the single life has been really weird for me to come across women who expect me to be a certain way or expect me to do certain things predisposed because I'm a guy. Like, women will say, oh, a guy's supposed to pay for everything, or you're supposed to do this. And I'm like, I don't know you, you know. Like, my money and my time is valuable. So if I go out on a date with a female, I don't believe in paying all the time on the first date. And somebody's like, how do you not believe in that? I'm like, because, like,
dating life is weird. And I'm, like, preparing myself not just for professional endeavors, but in social endeavors, but getting out there and re-entering the dating scene. And that is something. Dealing with the different mindsets and everything, that's weird in itself.
and it bothered me. Because I went out on dates over the last couple of months. I went out on a couple, like a lot. I won't say a lot of dates because I go out with my friends a lot. And we just, you know, have women come out with us. But I've gone like one-on-one particular dates with a couple of women, and you know, most of the women I went out with, we usually split it on the date. You know, like you pay their part, I pay my part. And it's funny because I tend to attract older women now, I think. Most of the women I'm attracting are like a few years older, you know, or, you know, even a lot older in some cases. So it's
like my
age.
Yeah, because there are some youth looking 40 somethings. And I have a lot of friends who are, you know, who like younger guys. And I know a lot of younger guys who they prefer older women. Or let the chips fall where they may. Yeah.
And I think. In some way, you know,
you're very mature. You have a very mature outlook on life, and I guess based on your life experiences, and you have this persona like, I love the funness of life, but life is serious too, and that attracts women of all ages.
and I guess you know, like, I don't really know what it is. I've heard people.
You're decisive, but yet you're spontaneous. You like to plan things out, like sticking to your vision, but you're spontaneous too.
I guess that's what it is. I don't know. You know, like I don't know. Like I attract so many older women now, and I don't mind it at all because, like, I've seen older women, they have more perspective. Like, one woman I went out with, and she was like, hey, look, I understand. You got a daughter. You know, you're still paying bills. Like, I wouldn't expect you to take me out. We don't know each other. You know, she's like, and if it doesn't work out, we don't, you know, enjoy the date that much. we can both just say, hey, I only pay for myself and cut our losses and we can go ahead. And I was like, you're the most refreshing thing I've ever seen in my life, because I'm meeting all these women who are my age or maybe like a year or two younger or a year or two older. And it's like, hey, look, we want to go out. You know, you're going to pick me up or, you know, like we're going out. And I'm like, nah, let's just meet up where we're going to meet, see how it goes from there, you know. Like, my ex can attest to the fact any dollar I would get, if I really, you know, believe or care about a woman, I'm